What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 114 of Valuetown. I'm Chanman V, and joining me, of course, is Noxious. What's up, buddy?
Not much, man. Just been looking at some of the new cars from Engoro.
Oh my gosh. Already made
my videos about them, but more even came out. You know, I thought I was clever this morning. I was like, we got three new cars yesterday, boys. Let's make a video. And then we got about eight new ones since. So I just feel like I got taken aback.
Me too. Like, I made a video on the first like 11 or whatever. And then since then, I think another 11's come out. It's been pretty crazy. But want to welcome our guest this week, which we've been trying to get on the last couple of weeks, but finally get a chance to schedule it with them. Sidonia, fresh from being picked up from TSM. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm happy to be here. And yeah, thanks for having me. I've been playing so many tournaments, so got pretty busy. And of course, I've seen the new cards as well.
Yeah, so we got lots to talk about. Of course, new cards are always the most fun periods and times of Valuetown. I know a lot of you guys enjoy that. So we'll be definitely diving into that. Want to talk to Sidonia, obviously, about being picked up. We've talked about, I guess, what we think, but why not hear from the actual person himself? And you know, coming back from PAX and coming back from South by Southwest, just that whole tour, right, you've been going through. It'll be great to hear how that all went. Trinity finished in Bahamas starting in a couple days too, so get our thoughts on that. And Mechatronics Workshop's back, guys. We got, I think, seven cards. Maybe, yes, I think seven or eight total cards to talk about. You know, obviously, some of those cards have to do with each other, so we'll kind of cover them as much as we can. But keep those cards coming, of course. Q&A at the very end with questions. If you guys want to write in and have us read out your questions or answer any questions you have, go ahead and do that by emailing valuetown@chainmanv.tv, and we will definitely get to that. Well, I guess our guest is gone now. No, he'll be back in just a second.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. We definitely don't want you going, like, your power just cutting out midway through. So it's all cool, man. Totally cool. But in the meantime, Noxious. So so much for drip feeding, right? Like, I think these cards are going to be like faucet level style coming out in the next, you know, couple weeks.
Right. So one of the, like, a lot of the cards were announced at the same time in a post that was made by Mike Donay, which I think for the sake of explaining some of the synergies that had to do with elementals, ended up revealing a bunch of elementals in the process, which I don't think is going to be the norm, right? I think this is like a one-time thing where they have to explain to us what's new in Engoro and they want to talk about elementals. So they do have to give us a bunch of them to look at to get a good feel for what it's going to be like. So most of the cards that we've had, you know, this time around are going to be elementals.
Yeah, that's the first taste we've had, at least, of elementals outside of the Pyros, and then, you know, just seeing that,
right,
like a priest car here and there, that sort of thing. Okay, so we'll dive into that in a second. But since Sidonia's back now, I figured we'd just start things off by doing, you know, kind of a mini interview with you. It might be fun to ask you just how you're doing and everything. So joining TSM, man, how do you feel? Like getting a chance to join a big organization like that?
Yeah, it feels great. Absolutely. Yeah, I just joined them like a few weeks ago and already had the chance to play like in two events representing them. And I should play more in the future. So that's really fun for me. And also, I'm going to be like setting up my stream with them. So getting more support to stream more. But I haven't had time to do that since I was at events, but should do that during this week for sure.
So clearly you're going full time now, right? Like, have you been doing full time for a while now?
I've been almost full time for a while. Like, I've just noticed, like, as you get more known or play, like, get good performances in an event, you get so many invitations that it's getting hard to find time to do anything else than Hearthstone, basically.
Okay.
Right. We were talking about that after your big America's win, right? Like, you were already looking, well, can I join a team? Can I, you know, what can I do now that I've had this title? And it's not as easy as winning once. You have to win more. You have to stay engaged and you have to prove that you can be there for the long term. And I think with the effort you've put up in the past year, it's been a pretty big and long run. And I think this pickup by TSM was definitely a well-deserved one.
Thank you.
So in terms of just, like, I guess one question that a lot of people have, and or pros or even just people looking to possibly get into the whole competitive space as a pro, maybe they're ladder warriors or something like that. is it very viable to be a pro right now in terms of, you know, making a living and doing that tour without streaming, you know, just being a competitive player and being on a team?
Well, I'm sure everyone has seen like the prize pools from HCT, and it's about like Pavel won $250,000 last year, which is about like 3 to 5 years of salary for a normal person. So
that's one person, right? That's not like supporting.
Yeah, so it's viable. And Pavel, as far as I know, he hasn't streamed or done anything else, and now he's getting invited to events. But like, that's the absolute ceiling you can make. But for someone, let's say, for instance, let's say someone who gets like one top eight in HCT and one top eight in DreamHack and wants to go to events, you're going to make maybe like $10,000 to $20,000 tops. And you're going to spend way more than that going to events. So it's probably not viable if you're not streaming. I think like for most people that want to make it in Hearthstone, if you're a decent player, you should definitely start streaming and also try to go to events like HCT that won't cost you much and that have bigger prize pool. And then you can get a team to support you, to send you to DreamHacks and all these other events.
And with teams, how would you describe the current environment with teams and folks wanting to pick up players, teams wanting to participate in competitive Hearthstone or you know, branding in competitive Hearthstone? Because we've had other big organizations like CLG, you know, just drop off, right? Like just stop their Hearthstone push. And now TSM's really getting into the competitive space. How would you describe it, given that you were like a free agent?
Yeah, it's hard to know sometimes. I've been approached by many, many teams recently because I've had good performances, basically. Like I did, like I was at BlizzCon, and then I did good in the China event.
Or the sweep. Yeah, that was nice.
So that attracted a lot of attention. So I got a lot of people reach out to me saying, oh, we want to build a team around you, or here's some money, we want to send you to events, or things like that. But basically, like I got the feeling that they were interested because I had some impressive achievements, but like for most players I was talking to, like the ladder grinders or someone who probably like maybe got a top eight at the DreamHack or like good players that are trying to get a team, it's very difficult to get a team right now because there's a lot of good players that aren't signed. And also it's really dependent on events. For example, there was a Trinity series, like you were saying. So a lot of teams wanted to pick up players to play specifically in that one event.
Yeah, they just like get you for the one event, and then they just dump everything. They're picking up players for an event and then like dropping them afterwards.
Yeah, so obviously you don't want to see that happen too much. So I'm hoping there's going to be like a second Trinity series or more team events. And also you're seeing Blizzard doing the HGG thing. So that's like a whole new format Blizzard is creating, like specifically for that event. So if this format is successful, you could see independent organizers create tournaments with that specific format that would be like 4-player teams. So that would encourage teams to pick up players, which would be good for the scene, like can create some rivalries that go beyond just player against player. Because like often you can have a rivalry against the player. Like I played against Jason Zhou, I think 4 times already, and he's a Chinese player. So it's kind of super random that I got to face him so many times in a row.
Yeah.
But normally you can, like, I just played Zixo this weekend and we had a great match, but I could go another year without facing Zixo. So it's right. easier to build rivalries with.
Yeah, that's a good point. Never really thought about, I guess, the space being dictated more by the event organizers. You know, I always thought that just these big teams would, it'd be the opposite, right? Big teams getting into the space would make it easier for organizers, just, you know, or make it logical to organize team events. But it sounds like it might be a motivator, the opposite direction, which is kind of cool. That's great. That just means the organizers have even more influence, you know, on potentially how you know, or at least maybe how much money is being coming into the scene, right, from other big brands like TSM.
Yeah, I guess it depends who the organizers are. Like Trinity Series was by ESL, the yeah. organizer. And if Blizzard decides to organize a team event, other than HDG, that was not like teams but countries, that would have a lot of influence. But I'm sure if teams decide to pick up players, there's going to be more team events in the future. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Blizzard does have to get behind the project a bit to legitimize it. And then that will definitely honestly, Trinity was so well produced that if anything, it makes making another team event tougher for organizers that don't have the type of setup that Trinity had, because they have an amazing studio they can work with and they've got experienced people behind the production, right? Which is, you know, it's hard to compete with someone like Trinity with ESL at that point for after what we saw in Trinity and the chemistry between the casters and the amount of memeing that went on. It used to be that we said, well, you know, Seed Story Cup is where the memes happen. Now it turns out you can do that in a team format with any caster setup and it's going to work out. So I think the bar has been raised for production. And so just organizing an event is already more daunting baseline. And now if you're talking about competing with quote unquote the best team event and you know that's been done recently, I think that creates an even bigger barrier. But if Blizzard gets behind it, it's probably going to be more, you know, less meme-y, right? Definitely more.
I mean, level-headed, yeah, let's compare professional. Comparing C-Story to ESL is pretty much a big difference given that, you know, Blizzard, it is a more of a Blizzard-sanctioned event, Trinity was. So.
Exactly.
It's got to be tasteful memeing, you know, more so. More so than that.
There's a level of memeing that is no longer tolerable.
Yeah. So to a degree, I agree with you. I don't think it's... I mean, it's the Hearthstone community. Let's be honest, guys. Like, you know, I think a lot of stuff that isn't crazy production level can still be successful, you know, in this space, because that's just how the community is, which is good. That still gives a lot of people, you know, or event organizers opportunity to still do some cool things. And the team thing is still, you know, just barely touched on. You know, Amaz started it, obviously, and then now ESL is doing it. And I think ESL is just showing even more so that the team concept does work. That should be the future. And I hope that's good, because, you know, if it brings more teams back to Hearthstone and brings more money back to the players or whatnot, that's going to be great. And I'm just talking about the competitive players. You know, I would like to see competitive players being able to support themselves only playing and not having to split their time streaming. And because, I'm sure, Sedona, you're going to have to stream some just because of signing with TSM too.
Yeah, definitely. Streaming is going to be part of it. And yeah, as soon as I can get it set up, you should see a lot more of me streaming. But like, it really depends. Like, for now, there's a big gap between like now and the next event, which would be DreamHack Austin in April. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I've got some time to like play ladder and stream and play some opens or whatnot. But I think I'm still going to be like concentrating on events and performing well when there's events. But when I got a break, then I'm going to do more streaming.
Man, I can't wait for DreamHack Austin. The metagame hopefully changes a bit. I mean, the cool thing is that it's not like right after the release. It's about, you know, 2 weeks or 3 weeks afterwards. So I think at that point, the metagame will have started shaking up and like it'll start making sense, right? Like the days following the metagame, like the new expansion, oftentimes nothing makes sense. But then 2 or 3 weeks later, having DreamHack Austin with that timing, I think is going to be fantastic. I'll be there casting with Admirable and TJ, if I'm not mistaken. So
I mean, last year it was great.
I'm pretty excited.
It was great last year. I mean, we saw the Paladin. I mean, Shocky ended up pulling it out. But we saw a mixture of the old and the new. And it was just a very good timing on how the meta was playing out and just the freshness of everything.
Yeah. I think we'll even have Songbird casting with us.
Yeah, Cora's going to be there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cora's going to be here.
Well, let's talk about your road trip recently. You know, you represented TSM at both ONOC tournaments at PAX and South by Southwest. How did that go? I mean, I think you went pretty far in the first one, at least. So I wasn't sure how you did in the South by Southwest.
Actually, yeah, I finished exactly fourth on both of them.
Both of them? So, fourth? Oh, man.
Yeah, so it's nice. It's good. Like, if you told me before the events, oh, you're going to go to two events, I finished fourth on both of them, I wouldn't have taken that for sure. But, like, still don't like losing, and I wish I would have won. But, like, overall, it's still a good result. And like Noxious was saying, like, I feel the metagame was not so bad for these events because like there's only one deck that is super overpowered right now, which is Pirate Warrior. And when you remove it from the equation by banning it, which is what almost everyone was doing, the rest of the decks are pretty balanced with each other, which is pretty good. It's way better than it was like with the Aggro Shaman meta that had Aggro Shaman and Pirate Warrior that were overpowered. So
right, yeah, you couldn't really ban both.
Yeah, we saw a mixture too. It wasn't like everybody was playing the same decks either. We would see, you know, maybe one or two decks here or there, just different lineups. I mean, we saw craziness from Toast, which we talked about last week. But it was good to see some variety, or at least some space, you know, to try different things, try, you know, and see some of the decks that we haven't even seen in a while, you know, especially on the ladder. That was definitely one thing that was good about it. Onox seemed to do a great job on both events. You know, as an organizer, how was that for the players?
It was a bit different than I expected. Basically, the event was not like, because I've been to DreamHacks before and they have this huge floor with like all the players play on their own devices at the same time, but they were like on a booth at the event. So it was a pretty big booth, like with a crowd, which was nice. Like, it's pretty fun to play on a, like in front of a crowd, and we could see the stream of the event right there. So that was great. But there was like a limited amount of computers, so we had to rotate on them, which was like, at like the first day is pretty slow. But when players start being eliminated, like you only get like an hour break between each match. So that was perfect. Yeah, the organizers actually did a really good job, like really letting us know like, oh, your next match is going to be like at 2:30 p.m. So you knew exactly how much time you had to get food or whatever. And sometimes that's a big deal during events. So.
An event that's on schedule? Wow, man.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
Good job, you know, to those guys for, you know, organizing again, two well open events where anybody could have signed up, right? Or qualified for it, right?
And yeah, anybody where it was like, in that city at that time could join for sure.
The viewership was actually pretty good for it too. So overall successful.
Mm-hmm.
Then I guess for the next month or so, I guess learning the cards and who do you, right now you're the only competitive player, right, for TSM. So I guess practice partner wise or just theory crafting, just the same group that you were talking to before.
Yeah, I've been working mainly with Ray C, who actually won the
first. Not bad.
Yeah, he's a really good player. He's one of the best players in NA right now, in my opinion. So I've been testing with him like since BlizzCon last year. And yeah, there's a few other guys that can change depending on what's going on. Like for this event, I mostly talked with like Hot Me Out and Trump a bit also.
Okay, cool.
But like this
nice. Game, so you're basically with the panda guys, right?
The panda guys.
You're talking to the panda guys.
Yeah.
Racy and Meowth.
Yeah, I feel like the metagame has been known for so long now that we don't need to practice for hours. Like you just wanna get an idea like what other people think about like specific deck lists, deck choices, stuff like that. Like yeah. Which decks are better, but you don't need to practice Jade Druid for hours. I mean the deck's been known for like 4 months now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's exciting, man. It's great to see. I mean, fourth in two tournaments, that's really, I mean, given that how many people are in the tournaments and, you know, the open aspect of it, I mean, that's really good results. Hopefully you can get a win, though, at DreamHack Austin, because that would be amazing. Have Noxious casting you, too. how perfect
yep.
would that be?
Hopefully. I mean, again, like, it's going to be a Swiss round, I think, again. So there's going to be so many games ongoing at the same time. It's hard. But I'd love to cast some
hard, but it's
man.
Awesome. I remember last year just watching everybody.
I love
it was
Swiss.
So intense, man. Yep. Everybody was, gosh, it was just life or death watching. You just like stare at them watching them. And they're so crazy intense. But that's what's awesome about DreamHacks, getting a chance to be in that kind of environment. Yeah. And they do a good job of setting it up too. So these long tables with, you know, everybody on their iPads and things like that. It's really, really cool. Okay, well, why don't we move on and talk about some cards? I know a lot of people are waiting for that part of the show, and it's the part I'm Phoenix most excited about, too. So let's hop on over to our card view here, and yeah, let's kind of go through, man, I don't know how many cards we have. I think we might have like almost 20 cards to go through, so we're going to try to get
Yeah, there's almost 20 cards for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, so let's start off with the card I think they led off too, even with the Peter Whalen and Day 9 video, which happened late last week where they revealed 11 total cards in addition to 3 tokens or, you know, I don't know what you call them, but there were 3 additional things revealed there too. So in total, like 14 things. So we're going to mix that with just all the cards that have been released this week and just in the last day or two, or leaked too in some cases. But this one is Explore Ungoro. 2-mana spell, epic card, replace the deck with copies of Discover a Card. Yes, this is Hearthstone, right?
This is Hearthstone, right?
Yeah. So this replaces your deck. It's almost like getting a bunch of Raven Idols, essentially.
Yeah, you're basically replacing your deck with Raven Idols that only have one function. You can't choose if it's a minion or a spell. And because this is a warrior card, it is going to be clearly either warrior or neutral. So at 2-mana to start off exploring Ungoro, it is an epic. So you can basically make any deck a weird deck. You can be the most, like, you can be a player with a basic collection and you put in nothing but Chilwin Yetis in the deck. And if you just concede every game or you don't pick up Explore Ungoro, you can at least eventually play Explore Ungoro and finally have fun. I think what could That's be awesome is a like a friendly duels where you both agree to play Explore Ungoro and nothing else. So you just both have to start with it and that is it. I think that could be a really fun game mode for, you know,
I like the idea of basic sets with just two exploring Goros, or maybe
exploring Goros, and you just make that deck a thing.
Yeah, and make that deck a thing and go at it. That sounds like fun. So, Donnie, what do you think, man?
Yeah, of course, you look at that card and you think it's completely unplayable, but yeah, some people were saying it could be like a bit less random Elite Star Seeker that can get threats into your warrior deck, like a control warrior type during, like, at the end of the game, can get some threats, but you don't get as much value for sure as you did with Elise. So I think, like Noxious said, it's probably just going to be a fun card.
Yeah, like Control Warrior. What's that, man?
I'm not sure.
Does that actually exist?
That tier 2 deck against one deck? It's tier 2 against one deck, and then it does okay.
I know.
Yeah, right? It's pretty. It's like Control Warrior, I don't think would even have a use for this, right? That's the problem is, yes, sometimes you have dead cards, but those dead cards are in your hand, not in your deck. So replacing your deck with copies of Discover a Card just doesn't seem very appealing. Renounce Darkness changes everything in your hand, in your deck, everything. Yeah. Whereas this is just, your deck now becomes an unknown jungle you're going to be exploring through. And the fantasy of exploring Ungoro is there. I just don't think it's going to be played by anyone who wants a real deck.
Gadgetzan will obviously be a Gadgetzan Auctioneer will be an interesting combo with this, or one that's going to
be awful.
Many,
it's
going to
be
times.
Garbage.
They're going to keep drawing.
It's
going to
be awful. Yeah, because the Discover card, yeah, we've said about, you know, it's going to replace your deck with one cost spells, so they're not even free. Like, you can't just keep cycling; you have to pay to discover. You're taxing yourself on every card you discover by one. You're saying, "I want to pay one to then get a random card." Almost, you get to discover it, but it's mostly random. So,
should be interesting. I'm just surprised they made it a warrior card. I felt like this should have been a hunter card. Just given that it's exploring, right? When have warriors exploring?
You know.
But that's thematically, I guess it's not that big a deal. Yeah. Why don't we move on here? The next card we got is a mage card. So Arcanologist, a 2-mana, 2/3 body, battle cry, draw a secret from your deck. It's a common card. And this is, I guess what you could say, the modernized Mad Scientist, I guess you could say. Obviously, it's a mage card specifically, but a lot of people have been basically saying this is what Mad Scientist should have been. Donnie, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this is obviously a good card. Just like a 2/3 drawing a card for 2-mana is like really aggressively costed. And like the only drawback is a bit like Mad Scientist. Once you don't have any more secrets in your deck, it's not going to do anything anymore. But I think you can probably live with that in most decks that this is going to be in.
You think there are enough good secrets for this to work? Because Freeze Mage is clearly, right? Freeze Mage... Freeze Mage, clearly this is better than any drawing card because you're looking for Ice Block all the time, right? But in any other kind of mage deck, do you see this possible? Tempo Mage possible with this?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think you would have to see all the cards first because they've been trying a lot of secret type synergy in Mage, like Cabal Lackey and the 5/5 guy.
Yeah.
The Crystal Runner, yeah.
Crystal Runner. I mean, even just Ethereal Arcanist too. I mean,
I don't think it's going to be any good, like, judging from the cards we've seen so far, but maybe once we see all of them and put them together, like, it can be some kind of tier 4 deck or something, but it doesn't seem good so far.
We need good secrets. You know, it's like, hopefully in this release, they come out with at least a secret or two that are... No, you don't think so?
I'm against new secrets for Mage. Like, Counterspell, Spellbender, like, there's too many of them you have to play around already. If the archetype is easy to know, I'm fine with it. If there's such a thing as a secret deck that does literally nothing but secrets and has a viable way to get them out for cheap consistently, and you just have to flip a coin on turn two as to whether or not you're running into a Counterspell, otherwise you lose the game, that would trigger me. Like, I said to Ben Brode too, I was like, you know, Crystal Runner bothers me as a card because if it's ever good, it's too good. Well, it's like Thing from Below.
Yeah.
We were all fine with the concepts. Like, totems suck. All right, good. This card is fun until you realize it's not fun anymore once it tempos out. So if consistently mages can get secrets out and you have to coin flip to answer them, it's like having Cloaked Huntress jammed with a like 5/5 slapped on top of it. This type of archetype, I'm not a huge fan of. It scares me a bit, I guess.
Well, I mean, I know what you mean by that, but it's going to be a waste of a design if there are no secrets that are good enough to play with the
right.
Games.
No, for sure. And Counterspell is good, right? Counter is a quest. Cabal Lackey, turn one, Counterspell.
Well, that's the thing. Like I think all the spells are, in theory, conceptually, they are. Very, I mean, there's like a couple or three that are tempo specific with Mirror Entity and Counterspell and even Spellbender. But the problem is that they're three mana. You know, that's a big difference between two and three mana, like the Hunter cards are. And because they're three mana, they're typically very easy to play, at least on curve. So let's just say you play this card and then you play a Counterspell next turn. If your opponent has coin, then it's like super simple, right? And in Mirror Entity, they're generally going to have smaller minions in early turns. So secrets would only, you know, the secrets are only useful, at least Mage secrets, later in the game. And having to hold secrets later in the game, isn't that tougher, Sidonia, just generally for mages?
You mean having secrets later in the game?
Well, at least, you know, some of these tempo ones, like Mirror Entity and, you know, wanting to play them early.
Some of them that are good late, but I feel like this card is going to be used more to... get out specific secrets and decks that don't run many of them, but that are key cards to the archetype. For example, Icebox and Freeze Mage. Because I think like the value secret deck where you just put like tons of secrets and try to get value from them is going to be really difficult. Especially like the only good one for that was Duplicate, and it's gone.
Yeah.
Oh man, that one was at least very fun. I'll say that much. I wish we still had a deck that worked like Echo, Giants, Duplicate Mage, but
yeah, I do too.
You know. I wonder what secret mage will look like in Wild at some point. That's a good question, because some of the good tools for secret decks are out there, but they're like in the Wild format. And in Standard, you know, we have Cabal Lackey, we have Kirin-Tor Mage, we have secrets we can play for zero. But over there, they've got Mad Scientist, and now they've got Arcanologist, and now they've got Cabal Lackey and Crystal. They've got everything. They've got Duplicate. What does that deck look like over there? That's something that would interest me. At some point,
it'd definitely be fun for sure. No question, this is a good card though, and I think the strength of this card really depends on just what secrets there are. I think right now it's already good. If they actually added crazy good secrets, this card would be broken. it's a fine line with this one.
So I'll say one thing: if you know, we know that Reno is rotating out. Reno Mage is going to be like playable still. You can still use an Ink Master Solia deck just without Reno. Now, what we have to know is, what is that mage quest? If it has to do with secrets, for whatever reason, it might not be. It might just be play spells, right? We don't know. We have no clue at all. I don't think. But the point is, if the quest is really, really good and the reward kicks in, like it clocks in at a huge power that you could include in a Reno-type deck, then maybe, you know, maybe I could see this type of card be added alongside Loot Hoarder and Novice Engineer to cycle through your deck and just go... Reno E, but you know, is it going to be survivable to run into Pirate Warrior, you know, with this type of deck without Reno in your deck?
I'm waiting for the quest reward minion to be whatever his body is, and the text be play every single available secret possible, like on the mage. So he immediately gets, he's the Riddler. And maybe they
get everything
the
at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God. No.
I bet there's a 1% chance.
The new Christmas tree.
The new Christmas tree. That's right. All right, let's move on. We got, I guess, moving on or talking a little bit more about some mage. They announced these elemental cards, which was, I guess, the second one or elemental related one that the mage had. So there's the Flame Geyser, which is a 2-mana spell. It's deal 2 damage, and this is mage spell, by the way. Add a 1/2 elemental to your hand. It's a common card. So kind of interesting. And then the Flame Elemental is a 1/2 elemental for 1 mana. And then another similar card that's a common card here is a 1-mana Firefly common Battlecry. Add a 1/2 elemental. This is, again, a 1/2 elemental. So this is interesting, right? Because this isn't like a token. This isn't like Jade where you deal 2 damage and it just shows up on the board. This actually puts it into your hand, which kind of leads to some of the other minions we'll be talking about where elementals do. What are your initial thoughts on this?
So one of the cool things, like, let's just talk about the mechanic, but yeah. Because Mike Dunham mentioned it, but the elemental theme is going to revolve around how many elementals you have played on the previous turn. So if you play 5 elementals in one turn, on your next turn, your next elemental that has an ability will refer to that and say, hey, based on the amount of elementals you've played last turn, gain health, or, you know, this guy becomes stronger or deal damage to the enemy. So giving you 1/2 elementals in your hand in that respect is more valuable. But the big question is it going to be better to buff up an elemental one turn later than get a, you know, 6/6 Jade Golem right now? That's the big question, because they have to. Yeah. But I'm asking the question because it's a direct analogy. We have a mechanic right now that does a similar thing, but it puts it into the board and it grows bigger and bigger. So the question is the 1/2 elemental going to be fueling powerful enough cards that I want to add 1/2s to my hand instead? Because think about it in a multiple turn setup. If I play Flame Geyser on turn 2, I have a 1/2 elemental in my hand. But at the end of the day, if I can't play it on turn 3, then that card is sitting there until I'm ready to go, say, Fire Elemental, I mean, 1/2 elemental, 1/2 elemental, 1/2 elemental into my follow-up turn where I do something crazy. It's really going to be difficult, I think, to balance out the power level of cards based on elementals played on the prior turn for every class, you know, while not making either Jade obsolete or overpowered. It's like there's one or the other. I'm afraid this mechanic, while amazing on paper, may not pan out the way we want.
Yeah, and just because you're bringing up a lot of these cards that are situational with the elementals, I brought up a couple too, but we'll talk about these specifically in just a second. But Sidonia, yeah, what do you think about that? Compare this kind of elemental mechanic with what we're having to deal with in the metagame right now, which is the Jade, you know, auto scaling without any kind of, you know, situational aspect to it.
Yeah, I just feel right now in the metagame, you have like this Pirate Warrior deck that's super fast and aggressive. Then you have that Jade deck that has infinite value, basically. And it's really, and also Dragon Priest is the same way, pretty much infinite value. So it's really difficult to compete with that. And it's really hard to see what the elementals are doing right now that could compete with that. Because like the Big Tongue guy is just like a big minion. So I don't see that being too good at 9 mana. And the Stone Sentinel, it could be good at stopping something like Pirate Warrior, for instance, but it's 7 mana. So it's going to be difficult to survive until 7 if you don't have other tools that are better than playing 1/2s for 1, basically. But maybe when we see like all the other elemental cards, it's going to make sense and it's going to look like something that's playable. These cards look like they could be something, but not strong enough so far.
Yeah, so with the stone, I'm showing a couple of new cards here. We have the first Shaman card that's been, is it the first one? Or was there that Murloc one? Was that Murloc?
We had the Volcano one.
Oh, Volcano, you're right. You're
Volcano
right.
Was Volcano. The first Shaman card we saw this set, which was actually pretty good overall.
It's definitely a nice removal card. So this is the second one. And it's a 7-mana, 4/4 elemental, Stone Sentinel, epic card, Battlecry. If you played an elemental last turn, summon 2/3 elementals with taunt. And one thing to note with Shaman is, you know, it's not just like Firefly, you know, the cards that you're seeing right now. Shaman, a lot of the cards, or at least some of the cards, were classified as elemental. Things like Alakira now is an elemental. Obviously, Earth elemental, Fire elemental. You know, there's other cards that work, could potentially work with this outside. But you're saying it's a little too late, though, Sidonia, right? That's the biggest issue.
Yeah, I feel the metagame might be too fast, or it's just like the decks are so polarized right now as either being super fast or super value that it's difficult to be somewhere in the middle and hope to compete.
Yeah.
And even Dragon Priest can generate infinite value with the Netherspite Historian operative engine. So right now there's like pretty much no deck that doesn't do speed or value.
Yeah. I mean, Dragon Priest is disappearing, so at least one of them will be gone on the reset. We still have Jade, though. Lastly, there's another card that's elemental and another one we referred to. 9-mana Ozruk. It's a legend card, not a class card. 5/5 elemental taunt. Battlecry gain +5 health for each elemental played last turn. So it's 9-mana. You're only going to be able to, I mean, who knows how many, I guess, elementals you played the previous turn, but you're going to probably want to stack some of these flame elementals like that to try to get them out so you can get a nice big Ozruk. I mean, we can see a 5/20 guy. I mean, that'd be kind of interesting to see, but in the end, he's not very threatening. He's just there to be a giant soap or something like that.
I'll put it this way. If a 5/9 that can't be removed with spells didn't see play, I don't think a 5/30 that can is going to see play.
Yeah, true.
Right? Like that. That's my issue with the... It's like we had this discussion a lot of the times with Reynad on the show, and he always says the same thing, which is 100% true. There's no difference between a 10-mana like 20/20 and a 10-mana 500/500. It's just like at some point it's... Do they have the removal or do they not? And
I still disagree with that, but
well, sure. If you have a Shadow Flame that hits enemy face, maybe. But as long as we have, like, you know, huge, huge costly minions, the most important thing is how likely are they to stick and get you value. Ragnaros could do that. And sadly, right now, there's just about none that can once the rotation hits. So bulky minions in Hearthstone are notoriously hard to make work. You know, Tyrion, the exception, sort of. Grom has shards, that's good for him. Alexstrasza is used for combo setups. Jiraxxus gives you incredible value over the long term. It's like they have to do something right now, otherwise it's kind of difficult to justify including them. And this guy's just a taunt wall. You know, why play him over Ancient of War? Like, you know, put them side to side, you're like, okay, what does he do better?
Too. I mean, Ancient of War is arguably better because he's at 7. Yeah, to your point, you know, I don't think there are any defensive cards outside of Deathwing, you know, like really, in the 9/10 slot. That's just not how Hearthstone works. You know, it's like it's either got to be crazy value for greed situations, or it's got to be threatening, which, you know, this card definitely is not. We'll see, you know, maybe folks that are literally just up to they just had it. They've had it with the aggro decks, and they're literally putting 12 taunts in their decks. And it's like, dang it, I'm putting in Ozruk as well as my Earth Elementals and everything in it. Then maybe they can pull it off. I don't know. But actually, Earth Elementals, you wouldn't even be able to play this after Earth Elementals.
No, you can't.
We'll have to see. Yeah, we'll have to see how that plays out. But this is the first. This is at least the reveal of how possibly the Elementals will be used, or the synergy of Elementals will be used in. Okay, next up, we've got a Hunter card. It's a 7-mana legendary Swamp King Dread, 9/9 beast. After your opponent plays a minion, attack it. So this is a card I've gone back and forth with a lot of people. I seem to disagree with a lot of people. Some people agree with me, but definitely a good card to discuss, and I'm really curious as to what you guys think. Sidonia, is it a good or bad card?
It seems bad to me. Like, it's 100 legendary, and they've all been bad so far.
Wait, so just because it's 100 legendary, it's like by default bad?
I'm kidding, but
if the class is not played,
oh damn!
I think like the ability it kind of gives your opponent minion charge, which you don't really want to do. Of course, they have to attack it, but I don't know. I don't see that being too great. Like, I could be proven wrong, but I don't see it being great.
Noxious, what do you think?
So I love this card on paper because it is an instant spell, sort of, for Hearthstone, adapted to Hearthstone. Think of it as the way I look at this is just a big snipe. Like, that's just the way you should look at this card. It's a 7-mana snipe that kills maybe 2 minions, but they know it's snipe, so they can afford to not play into it. And one of the things you have to understand is I think this card becomes really good if Hunter is already good. Like, if Hunter gets high mains out consistently and doesn't die before turn five, and they consistently get their mid-range plan together, this is a good follow-up to high main. Like, this protects... If high main ate removal, and you've got some early game stuff that had to eat removal, this guy comes out as a 7-man and 9-9 that also removes Zeus board, for instance, as it comes out. Fantastic. But against a matchup that has any amount of removal, like Hex or Siphon Soul in some matchups, then suddenly this looks a lot less appealing. It's not a bad card, but I think the shells in which you'd like to play a card like this don't necessarily exist. And it's also super weak to adapt, where there's a chance they get poisonous as a keyword, and then this just dies to the adapted minion instantly, like Pit Snake and whatnot. And I don't know really how likely this card is to wear. I mean, it's even bad against the new 6-drop Paladin Legendary, by the way. Like, Keeper of Uldamon comes out, Battlecry triggers, this guy's a 3-3, attacks the Keeper, dies. It's like there's Aldor Peacekeeper, 1-9, attacks the Aldor, 1-6. It's not that great, is my point.
I know. I mean, definitely in some of those instances, if you're looking at it, you know, I think you made two good points, and some of the things I do agree with, which are, I'm judging this card assuming that there are going to be better early minions for Hunter, you know, because Hunter is just struggling through turns 2, 3, 4. I mean, that's like the biggest issue with Hunter right now, right, is that they can't get value situations against, you know, dragon decks, against, you know, there's a lot of classes that just have better cards than them, where historically Hunter's always got the advantage in turns 3 and 4, right? They just had better cards, and, you know, 5 was the hole, right? And then you can just get to 6. Right now, Hunters literally don't have any good cards or better than the other classes until 6. So I'm assuming that they will be trying to fix some of the things, making Rat Pack back better, making, you know, the Kodo better, something in there. And if they do that, like you said, Noxious, I think if you're transitioning from high main to late game, this card's a good card to do that. Hunter's never had anything. I mean, look at the card they've had to choose from, right? It was like basically rag or nothing else. And, you know, Call of the Wild for a while, but then it got increased. People still haven't been reconsidering it, at least not in the stage to completely reconsider bringing it back yet. But so this card, I don't know, it's pretty solid for at least the choices they have. I mean, compare this to Giant Sandworm. It's like laughable, right? Like, Giant Sandworm.
Right. It's not even the same, for sure. But yeah. But it feels like the Sandworm was meant to be an experiment on whether or not attacking repeatedly was too good. You know what I mean? Like, they're still in the phase where a lot of the mechanics they're printing are experimental. Of course, they never change them, but the idea is, like, the idea of Hunter getting max value from one minion. I love the idea of Swamp King Dread killing 5 things. I mean, that's, you play this against Zoo and they haven't beat you yet, you are, like, they're locked out. They are completely shut down. Zoo cannot possibly, like, they will smash 3 cars into this one guy. Yeah. It's pretty tough to salvage.
Well, I like that it forces your opponent too. Like, it you know, in situations where your opponent has board advantage and has tempo, then yeah, I mean, those situations are a lot easier. Maybe they have a poisonous card, maybe they have a dap card, they can remove it, and, you know, it's easy, right? In games where the tempo is even, or even if they're slightly behind, I mean, this card just, like, puts a wrench in your opponent's whatever plan, yeah, or whatever, however your deck is comprised. It's going to put a large wrench in it and force you to do things that you might not want to do, which, you know, will help the Hunter obviously in a big way. So I think it's interesting. Will it be good? I don't think it's, I think it was purposely meant to be counterable, you know, with poison and things like that, which is smart design wise. Like, I like to see that, you know, like that they took that into account. You know, they could have made this an 8-8. Like, I think historically this thing would have been like an 8-8. So at least
an 8-8, yeah, or 7-7, something, yeah, garbage that doesn't survive a single minion at that stage in the game.
Yeah, and if it survives, you can still hit face with this guy. This isn't like only minions, like, right?
Yeah, here's a tinfoil hat. They created the card before they chose to rotate rag, and then they were like, well, I guess he's still around. we might as well print him now. It's like, it's too late.
Well, they definitely waited until Sylvanas was gone, right, to print this card.
Yeah.
Sylvanas is simple to deal with this card.
God.
Okay, well, let's talk about a fun card here, which, or a pretty new card or concept. Elise is back. but she's back as the Trailblazer this time around. She's a 5-mana legend card, non-class, of course, 5/5 body, Battlecry, shuffle sealed Un'Goro pack into your deck. Like, what? And then, like, Un'Goro pack, you look over here, is a 2-mana spell, add 5 journey to Un'Goro cards to your hand. Okay, so I think right off the bat when they were announcing it, it was just like, oh, man, this is, like, total fun card, and, you know, nobody's really think of it as anything else. But it sounds like more and more people talk about it, the more and more people are like, you know what, it could be, you know, just, it could be a pure card value type of situation in some of these decks. So Sidonia, what's your thoughts on this card, and is it viable?
Yeah, I think when you look at cards that are standard like that, 5-mana, 5/5 is pretty much like the benchmark for a playable 5-drop. So just by itself, if it does anything good, it's probably going to be playable. And if you look at the ability, like, of course, you need to pay 2 mana to get the cards, but you're going to get, it's basically 2 mana, draw 5 random cards, which is something like in any value matchup, it's gonna break it, but it's not gonna do anything in a tempo game basically. But it should not be too bad because you still get the 5-mana 5/5. But just drawing the Un'Goro pack that needs to be 2 mana for is gonna probably lose you a lot of tempo games. But if the game becomes more value oriented, it's gonna be pretty good.
Okay, so you think it's purely gonna be value oriented? So more in maybe a later, maybe a slower mid range control type of deck versus super aggro?
That's, well, against aggro as control, you don't need value at all. You just,
yeah, you don't want that. That's so,
well, in some cases, so
control against other control decks, basically.
Right. Well, the only reason I brought up aggro is just that, you know, initially I wasn't thinking of this at all from an aggro standpoint, but then, you know, I was talking to a few people and they were like, well, you know, there's some classes that just can't draw. Like, you know, they're not warlock, you know, that actually have a life tap that can keep the ammo going. And in those kind of cases, you know, at least could be just that 5-drop you throw down, and then you play this pack on turn 6, and then you just reload at least with some kind of minions to throw down and maybe finish a game, or maybe even a spell, right, to finish a game.
Well, the pack, you still have to draw it, so it's going to take probably...
Oh, you still have to draw it, right, because it's just in your deck, five, right?
Then take 10 turns before you draw it, and... Sure.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's not going to be playable in aggro for sure.
Anyways, like I guess generally speaking, though, I feel like this card was super well designed. Like, this is like one of my favorite cards they designed in the last, man, maybe year and a half. And it doesn't have to do with the viability of it so much. It's just the fact that what it does, you know what I mean? And what it does is it opens a pack, which is one of the most fun things for people to do in Hearthstone, is to open packs. And the fact that you can potentially do this every game, for me, design-wise, as a game designer, that is super smart, like, to do it, especially with a digital game, right?
It's clever. It definitely is clever. I don't know how much... Like, initially when I saw this, I was like, oh, it shuffles a pack, and if you draw it, it's going to give you an actual pack. But no, clearly that would not be a thing.
Oh, my God. No, okay, that
I was actually hoping
insane.
That would... I thought that was a cool catch-up mechanism. No, I seriously thought this would be, like, a cool catch-up mechanism, right? But turns out, you know, clearly that's not at all what they had in mind. It's fun, you know, the type of card that if I ask my wife, what do you think about this? She's like, oh, this is fantastic. And if a pro player is asked, oh, it's value, you know, it's like, there's two different, two ways to look at it. And it's
good.
A card that hits both spectrums of, you know, competitive and casual players at the same time. And, yeah, it's kind of like Elise, Star Seeker, the initial one, just the same way to me, in terms of what it's trying to accomplish.
And this is them leveraging it being a digital game too. This is like one of the first, right. You know, like there's been some of them, but for the most part, it's been more aesthetic and feel and that sort of thing. This is literally something you know, you'd have a hard, very, very hard time doing in a, you know, a physical TCG game.
Yeah.
All right. Next up we've got, this is the Pirate Killer. So we're just gonna do two of these, last cards at the same time. So the first one is a Golaka Crawler, which is a 2-mana, 2/3 beast, rare, Battlecry, destroy a pirate and gain +1/+1. And it's a crab, guys, for the folks listening. It's meant to be kind of like Hungry Crab, but
they should have called him Hungrier Crab,
yeah,
or like Famished
crab. I would have liked that.
Famished Crab would have been fantastic, or something.
Booty-eating crab or something like that. So let's
Booty
talk about
eating
that
crab. Oh God, please no. Let's not leave. No.
That'd be so good. Away. What are you talking about? That'd be great. So I guess, is this the answer for Hunter? Are Hunter's answer for pirates or pirate warriors? What do you guys think?
I'm sure some people will play it just like some people played Angry Crab, but I don't think it's going to make its way into a meta deck, for instance. I don't think there's going to be like nearly enough pirates for that, unless they're printing pirates I don't know about.
They unnerf STB.
I think it's mostly a flavor card.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh,
too.
They unnerf small time Buccaneer.
Yeah, they unnerf small time Buccaneer. All of a sudden, Galaga Crawlers played everywhere. What do you think, Noxious?
I think this card is okay. Wait, I need to choose my words carefully here. It's a brute force answer to a situational contextual problem. It's like they couldn't come up with a better way to fix the potential pirate shenanigans, and they were like, "This is definitely a tech card." They didn't go, "Oh, let's play Scarred Purifier, little Exorcist." They're like, "How does Hearthstone work?" Well, the only way to get tempo back in this game is to develop something and kill something at the same time. Let's slap it onto a card. In this case, the thing that bothers me is if pirates that aren't a 1-1 ever become good, like Naga Corsair or Lucky Do Buccaneer, and this card, for whatever reason, is around, then that can get shut down really harshly. It's like a BGH for those like higher cost pirates. Not so bad against, you know, early patches and everything. I don't think that's going to be an issue. I don't expect Naga Corsair and Lucky Do Buccaneer to become fantastic, you know, overnight ever. But this is definitely an easy way to keep those in check. But I think what makes it even more like viable than Hungry Crab is that it's not a 1-mana 1/2. It's a 2-mana 2/3. Like, even when it's bad, you know, it's okay. It's a body on the board. Vanilla it doesn't body, do the dishes, yeah. But
legit,
it's all right.
Vanilla body, right? And it's a beast, right. Too, so there is possible synergy with... Yeah, I agree with that. I think swing cards generally in Hearthstone have not been my favorite cards. And this is a swing card, given potential. It's restricting. It's always going to be the design restricting. With the current, you know, Pirate Warrior, this is a powerful card against that deck. We're not talking about killing 1/1s, guys. We're talking about killing 3/4s, you know, and 3/3s, and... swinging it. I mean, that's literally a game-winning play in that matchup right now. So people who are just...
It would help a lot, for sure. It's like Totem Golem comes out, but it also kills your guy. That's pretty crazy.
I bet this card shuts down Pirate Warrior at the lower ranks. Like, I think more people... I think more people will play
lower
this
ranks.
Card. Seriously. I think people will play this
I believe
card
it.
More so.
It's such a meme,
ranks.
Though.
Yeah.
It's so hilarious to think about.
And they're going to be saying, no, guys, Pirate Warrior is 50% winning percentage, guys, because it's not played at all.
Pirate Warrior is a bad deck. At rank
balanced.
20, they never win.
Yeah.
At rank 20, balanced. They never win.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how this card plays out. And, I mean, they'll have to design around it, so we're not going to, you know, we'll probably won't see any kind of powerful universal pirates anytime soon because of this card, mm-hmm. but... we'll see what happens there. The next card we have here is Tar Creeper. 3-mana, 1/5 elemental. It's a common card. Taunt has +2 attack during your opponent's turn. So this is the first card that we see that changes between offense and defense. Or at least between, you know, your opponent's turn and your turn. All right. Thoughts on this card?
Yeah.
This guy's good, right? If I don't know, go ahead.
Yeah, I think he's good as well. I think it's really interesting because a lot of people have been asking for strictly defensive cards and saying they miss anti-killbot so much or something like that. And that's definitely a card that you cannot mistake it as anything else. Like, it's a purely defensive card that's going to go into probably mostly defensive decks. It adds elemental synergy as well. So if we see good elemental stuff to do, they can try to do that with it. So I think a lot of people have been wanting this type of card.
So cheap too. Yeah, 3-mana is so cheap because, heck, if you have the coin, you could get this out in turn 2.
I mean, it's like a Blackwing Technician, basically, that stunts and can't attack.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. It's like on defense, right? Because on offense, you can't really play it because it hits only for 1, which isn't exactly amazing. But it's still one of those cases where I'm looking at the card, I'm like, is it more played in defensive decks or is it more played in Zoo? Because Zoo needs to counter, it needs to protect its board, right? Granted, it's not a fantastic card in Zoo, but a 1/5, you know, leads to Argus, gives it a 2/6. It's a 4/6 on the opponent's turn. It's not great. It doesn't replace Imgang Boss after the rotation, clearly. It's not a replacement for Imgang. But the general idea is you have, you know, they used to play Shield Bearer. The general mentality there is I need to protect that early board I've established against other minions. So maybe this 1/5 is a decent way to do that without having to resort to Argus on perfect targets.
And it's a good option for slower decks, too, to play, you know, something to slow down aggro decks that, you know, might not be Zoo, which, you know, Zoo tends to have a little more, you know, power and stickiness to it than, you know, what we see from the Pirate Warrior or maybe even some of the aggro shaman. It's nice that they'll have an option to play this card with a Doomsayer or, you know, like right now only Doomsayer is like the card that people prefer to play. And it's like, okay, you got that. And then you just got a bunch of spells and you just hope for the best, right? Tar Creeper, yeah. I think, is a nice option for folks to have. And, you know, if you want to play a heavy Taunt deck, you can. You can do that now. Who's the Chinese player that played like 8 taunts in his HCT deck, which was a lot of people were talking about and surprisingly effective.
Oh, I forget his name, but I know what you're talking
surprisingly
about.
Surprisingly effective.
Everybody was like, whoa, what happened? Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That was pretty cool.
So again, Tar Creeper, I think, is one of the best cards that they've designed, so far at least announced. Didn't take much either. That's what's cool about it. It's like, we're not asking for Raikon science, guys. We're just asking for, you know, just at least a level, like another level of complexity to it, just to show that, you know, you guys are have a, you know, I guess a better understanding of what's going on right now and what we potentially need, you know. And I think this is a good way to do that, you know, not have a card that's good or it's situationally good. And it's not like universally, it's like they didn't make a 3-mana 3/5 like a Technician. They didn't actually make that. You know, they made something that was actually in between, but functions as a 3/5 in the right spot, which is nice.
Right.
Okay, next up, we got the rogue legendary. 4-mana. This is the replacement for Pillager, right, guys? This is the 4-mana 5/3.
Clearly.
Corpse Flower. Death Rattle. Go dormant. Play 4 cards in a turn to revive this minion. And when it's dormant, it turns into this thing called the Sharazan Seed. And the text for that is when you play 4 cards in a turn, revive this minion. So whenever it goes dormant, it actually still sits on your board. It's just, it becomes a seed that, you know, you can't do anything to. Yeah, so Rogue, this is the Rogue Legendary. You know, each class gets 1 Legendary outside of the quest. What do you think of this, Sidoni?
And I think with Rogue, they're being really careful not to make cards too good because the class already has a lot of tools in Classic and it's been like generally good with like the Miracle Rogue and stuff. So they don't want to shore up its weaknesses, basically. So I don't think this card is very good. I don't think it's like it's a Miracle Rogue type card, but if you're in a position to play 4 cards in a turn, do you need an additional 5/3 that you've played 4 mana for earlier? Probably not. So. And also,
yeah, that's been the question, right? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, also like 3 toughness, it dies to any 2 drop, any removal, so it's just gonna die easy and come back if the rogue is already winning.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's what worries me, right? It's like the concept is so amazing. I love it. I absolutely love the design. Like the dormant, the idea that it goes dormant and you have to do something to bring it back. The issue is like 4 cards in one turn is a lot. Now, one of the ways that I thought about, you know, maybe making this, you know, not rely on you cycling through, because the most obvious thing, hey, let's cycle our deck. Let's go crazy, play 0 cost spells, cycle with Gaddisdan. The alternative is bounce stuff back with Brewmasters and Gaddisdan Ferryman. You can bounce them back, you know, one another, right? So if you play like 2 Youthfuls on each other, you can play 4 of them and that brings back the flower. Now that example is horrible because you would never do that. Because you would pay 8 mana to bring back a 5/4 and you've done nothing that turn. But the general concept is if you mix in bounces with cheap spells, you know, stuff like Shadow Step and whatnot, then suddenly the 4 cost the four cards doesn't seem as daunting. And now I have to wonder, and that is a big question mark for me, have they added cards that make this better? Have they improved, I mean, implemented that as more dormant cards? And Rogue has a dormant mechanic. Like, we don't know a thing about whether or not this is a more widespread mechanic. And if it is, then suddenly reviving your board repeatedly is very much in line with the Death Rattle theme they tried to push when Unearthed Raptor in the past. And I think that could fit the Rogue class.
Well, yeah, I agree that it would be nice if it was something to do with balancing, because then there'd be clear synergy, right? Like right now, the only synergy with balancing, and I mean, that Ferryman is, I mean, it's bad. That card is actually really bad, unless there is specific reason to have a bunch of cards that balance. And right now there isn't, so the card doesn't make any sense. There are cards like that in the Rogue that just don't make sense right now as to what they're trying to do. And so, Donna, you make an interesting point where you just don't think they want to make to shore up some of their weaknesses, and that would suck. I mean, as a Rogue player, that would be really terrible if, like, the only thing you could ever play is, you know, the Miracle or maybe some kind of crazy, you know, ultra aggro type of Rogue.
Well, I think they would have to remove the Miracle card if they want to add something else to Rogue. And I think that's the direction they're going to go in the future. Like they've said repeatedly that they don't want classic cards to be played forever as the main, like, engine to a deck. But if you look at any Rogue deck, it's the Rogue deck has not changed much other than, like, the Finja deck now.
Yeah.
It's always, like, the same core cards. And if you add, like, any life gain, any taunts, any, like, just to shore up their weaknesses, then that can become really powerful.
Yeah, I agree that they don't necessarily have to put taunts, and you know, heal is definitely a debatable one too, but they could add cards like this that could have added tempo, you know, more of, say, Beneath the Grounds, but you actually get value, like, off the, you know, you get a body, like, with Beneath the Grounds or that sort of thing. And this is kind of how I envision this type of mechanic happening. I think this card could have been modified just very, like, a couple of small tweaks, and it would have been fine. I think the body could have been better. It could have been a 4/4, or maybe even just go full out 4/5, I mean, a 5/4 or whatever, like a Pillager. And then I think it's play three cards, not four cards. Four cards, how many times is four cards really going to happen in this game?
Yeah,
I mean, once for sure. Like, I think on average,
and then what sucks is, like, it doesn't keep the counter if you pass over.
I know,
right? It's not like play four cards total. Yeah, it resets every time. What a pain.
Yeah,
what a pain.
I think a better implementation, actually, than what I even just mentioned, would have been just to make it smaller. I think if it was like a 2-mana 2/2, and then just have it come back every time you play two cards, I'd be completely fine with that. And then you might have some kind of tempo oriented Rogue that's interesting, or maybe you have it come back, you know, as a weaker thing. But the fact that you can continually generate with a seed and have to interact with it, you know, you actually have to do something to make it generate instead of, you know, just auto generating, then that's where it makes, you know, planning turns and things like that much more interesting. This is just like you said, it's like part of a Miracle turn. And that's it. You know, it's like you have it happen once, maybe twice, and that's the extent of it. It'd be a complete waste, man. I just, like, I really like this implementation too, and it's just like, oh.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's awesome, but
I know. Yeah. Go ahead, Sedani.
Yeah, the flavor is really nice, so it would have been nice if it was better. I'm also curious, when I look at it, if you copy the Death Rattle with another minion, are you still going to get a Cherizin seed?
Mm-hmm. Right.
No, it's like, what's the name of that card? Unearthed Raptor on Anubarak gives you Unearthed Raptor back, or, you know, it doesn't trigger. Yeah.
Is that going to be the same case here? Because that was a big question. I think, I'm not sure if the devs ever answered it, though.
Well, if you can copy the Cherizin, I mean, if you can copy Cherizin, that'd be pretty crazy, because the card literally says you revive this minion. The Unearthed Raptor, Anubarak's keyword is return this minion to your hand, which is why when Unearthed Raptor copies the ability, it go this minion, i.e. the Raptor goes back to your hand. So I think you could copy the dormant. That's the thing. Like, it might copy the go dormant. The issue is it going to get the play four cards to revive it? Because that seems like it could be a second portion of of the card text that has nothing to do with the Death Rattle itself.
No, I think it sums it up, right? Go if a Unearthed Raptor, by the way, is retired. So we're talking about like
yeah, right, here. Sure.
So if it goes dormant, then play four cards in turn to revive this minion. Then I mean, whether it becomes a seed or just becomes some dormant version of it, it definitely comes back as a Raptor, clearly. But that's still good.
If you get the shares in seed, it might come back as a corpse flower if you copy it with a Raptor. I don't know. Because they clearly have the seed that is like...
Yeah, it's like a plant, right?
So. Like, I was thinking this card would just be like, it would just disappear and then come back with no seed, and then it would work with any card, but with the seed thing, it's kind of hard to see how it would work if it gets copied.
Yeah. I'm sure Toast will be making a video on this. I can get him asking, right? He's been tweeting those questions. Which one?
Better count on it. Better count on it. Yeah,
exactly.
Also, what you were saying about making it like more aggressively costed that can come back all the time, a bit like a Dread Steed. I think they don't want that in Rogue because of cards like Cold Blood, for instance. Like, often against Rogue, you need to kill all their 1/1s. Otherwise, they can like slap a bunch of Cold Blood and hit you for 10. So they kind of want to limit like Rogue's survivability of minions, I guess.
But, you know, you still have, unlike Dreadsteed. So Dreadsteed's a good example, right? Like, Dreadsteed was the first time they introduced this type of infinite mechanic. But the thing is they didn't implement it very well. Like, the way that they tried to keep it under wraps is just making it a 1/1. But that's the thing. Like, this card at least requires you to put some value in to actually get that infinite loop.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, you know, it in itself can keep things, you know, contained to an extent. It doesn't get ridiculously good. The Cold Blood's always going to happen. Yeah, I mean, the Cold Blood with even tokens from certain minions or whatever is always going to be some type of threat following turn. And is part of playing Rogue, right? Rogue is all about just going all in at one point. I've always felt like that was one of the themes of Rogue, is picking and choosing kind of the moment. You just go and, you know, hope for the best. It kind of continue that. But what do you guys think about this in a Nazoth deck? You think of anything? If Nazoth's even playable for Rogue? Oh, I can't hear you, Noxious.
Yeah, I don't even know what it does specifically. Like, does it come back as
comes back.
Fresh Sherazin?
Yeah.
Well, it's going dormant, so the actual minion itself isn't gone, right? Like, Malorn doesn't come back, does it? I think does Malorn come back?
Well, it is a death rattle, right? So it does.
Right. I think maybe Malorn does come back. Yeah, it never really dies. That's the question. Like, is this considered dead at any point? Because I know Malorn goes into your deck.
Yeah, well, this...
I forget if Nazoth brings it back.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess death rattle doesn't necessarily mean death in some cases.
You said Malorn is not brought back by Nazoth?
I think it might be. I forget if it is.
Because the way I read this card, I feel that it should bring it back, because the death rattle means it...
I should bring another one, right? Like an extra...
It's flower. A brand new one, like a brand new Sherazin.
You can fill your board with seeds and never be able to play anything else.
I know, right? It's like,
yeah, I think Nazoth summons a copy of it. Yeah, because Nazoth actually summons a copy of something.
And then Nazoth, and then you can only have seeds.
You know what I'm waiting for, guys? I'm waiting for that video where it's like, oh man, I got 8 cards. Yeah, like a freaking, like, summon 2 of these bad boys. You got like 4 like shares. Each quartz flower's on the board, and you're like, he's like cheering. It's like, God, that was an awesome turn, and then Hellfire.
Yeah, then you just lose them all, and then you have to
what?
And then you have no more room on the board to do anything, so you can't play 4 cards. So then you lose.
yep. Okay, next up, we've got some paladin cards here. Ooh, got them on top of you. Oh no! Whoops. Where's the paladin card? I think I'm. Oh, there it is. I moved it. Okay, so we've got two paladin cards that have been announced. The first one that was announced with Day 9 and Peter Whalen was 8 mana. Dino size epic spell. Set a minion's attack and health to be 10. So essentially create or make any minion a 10/10.
Right.
So it includes your opponent's minions too, right? And so it literally is just turning anything into that. The artwork's pretty awesome on this. It's like some giant, you know, Power Ranger looking like Murloc. It's pretty cool. But what do you think from the standpoint of viability and even practicality of this, Sonia?
Just looking at it, it's something Paladin doesn't really have access to, which is Burst, like with a Bluegill Murloc, like you can see on the art right there.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Paladin really wants to play 10 mana to essentially get a Pyroblast, right? Which Pyroblast is not really aggressively costed or anything. So, like, I really doubt this will see play. Like, I think it's like it's probably like a fun card and different than what Paladin has, but I doubt it will see play.
Yeah. Noxious.
Okay. Dinosaur size just seems like if there's a combo deck that comes up ever, sure. If anything, it's a buff to Ivory Knight. That's about it.
You think it's a buffed Ivory Knight?
Well, I mean, you get 8 health. You know, it's just the problem with 8 cost cards for Paladin is there's too many of them, and none of them are really doable right now. And this doesn't really change anything. If you think about it, Dino Size is a Pyroblast for Paladin in some aspects, like in many cases.
It can be a bit different. There are definitely some. I mean, I think Pyroblast is the way people think about it, right? Just put it on charge, hit. Or, I mean, you can even do something like Silverhand Recruit and just make it a 10-10, right? It can just, like, be a pure...
Right, but that's my point. Even then, it's still a Pyroblast.
It's a 10-mana 10-10, basically.
Right. It's, like, it's a Pyroblast on legs, but it's still a Pyroblast. Because you're attacking into something huge, which means your recruit is dying next turn, or you're going face, in which case you're just going for the kill. It's one of those really awkward cards where it's going to be super fun to play with, but whether or not it's ever viable is going to depend wholly on whether or not Paladin gets there. There are weird cases where this is just a really sick Blessing of Kings. Like, there are decks where I could see this just being like a Blessing of Kings because Paladin doesn't need more fours. And they're just like, yeah, if I'm going to buff something late game, might as well just jam an 8. But I don't think the setup for that type of deck is there yet. Like, there have been decks in Magic, for instance, where literally you can play huge buff cards and that is a game plan that's viable. In Hearthstone, it's a bit more complicated. Not even instant, you know, just Dino Size type.
Yeah, there's not very many archetypes, at least right now, for Paladin. Maybe eventually the aggro will come back, but I don't even think 10 is enough. I mean, we need a combo that does like 50 damage right now for Paladin to win games, right? Like, they double any fins. What's 10 mana going to do? You know, like, what's the 10 attack going to really, really do at the end of a game for a Paladin when they can't even hold board control at any point? So maybe there's something coming up. But that kind of leads us to the next card, which I think is a lot different. Sunkeeper Tarim, which is a 6-mana card, legendary, 3/7 body, has taunt, or is a taunt, and Battlecry, set all other minions' attack and health to be 3. So you could think of it as a quartermaster that works with all minions, including this includes your opponent's minions too, right? This is like across the entire board, not just your minions. So from the standpoint of what you can possibly do with it, I mean, there's obviously comboing abilities, and you know, hopefully they'll add some more flooding type of cards too, and you know, where this could be crazy value. But Sidonia, what do you see, like, potentially from this card?
Yeah, this seems like a very good card to me. If Paladin gets any kind of support, like, it's not, I don't think it's good enough to make it a deck on its own. Like, cards like, I don't know, Kazakus or whatever are good enough that you can put anything and it's going to be good. But like, if it has any like support of a kind of a mid-range Paladin like we had with Secret Paladin, it could be a really annoying card because, like, you can't really leave and like let Paladin have any board because then they will buff it like you had when the Quartermaster was played, and also they can't really put any minions to try to taunt or do anything because then you're gonna make their minions smaller and just like trade into them. So it seems like if there's a mid range Paladin type deck, it's gonna be really strong in it.
Noxious,
yeah. That's about the way I look at it, because if you look at it, right, 6-mana 3/7 that makes everything 3/3s, it's basically able to tank 2 minions, whatever they are. Like, imagine Mountain Giant on the opposing side. They can both be jammed into the Sunkeeper, and he can guarantee to take them both. That's a pretty big deal. The issue then is, well, does it have other applications? Well, it can make your 1/1s bigger, so suddenly playing a slow game and just using recruits and having the opponent ignore them because it becomes a problem. Now, the question is this a better Keeper of Wuldemon or a worse one? Or is this something you play on top of that in the format where, say, you have access to both? That's another question. Like, the fact that they have Aldor and Sunkeeper in the same environment is pretty cool. people brought this, like, I heard some people saying, oh, this is a good counter to Jade Golem. I'm like, no, it's not. I mean, it's just not a counter to Jade Golems. They're 12-12s now. Next turn, they're 13-13. It helps, it buys you a turn.
Yeah.
And then you're dead. So, on paper, it's probably pretty good against Jades, but it's like, what's the next return against an infinite turn deck?
Yeah, I mean, let's not mince words. I mean, Paladin has a lot of holes. Like, I think Paladin's one of the worst classes after the reset, because the only way it wins right now is with anything, and anything's going to be gone after that. So, you know, this is a card I think that helps set up some kind of end game for Paladin. I don't know what that end game is, so I'm just like assuming there will be something. And if you look at it from that standpoint, I think this card is extremely dynamic. Like, you can use it in so many different scenarios, and I think that's a product of something that's been well designed. And so you can use that defensively, like people were talking about with the Jade. You could use it offensively or for value, like Sidonia was mentioning with the mid range deck. Or you could use it to maybe heal something. You know, like maybe you have a, I don't know, like a 4-5 that ends up being a 4-1. You just want to make it a 4-3-3, right? There's all kinds of ways to do that. And, you know, this card gives Paladin the opportunity. Like, this is a way better version of Adric, you know, or something defensive like that.
Sure.
You know, this is way, way better in many, many levels. So I'm glad to see that. It's just Paladin, like, how do we win, guys? Like, we don't win with Dino Size. Like, 10 ain't enough. Like, that's not enough damage to kill.
We win through attrition. That's been the game plan of Paladin. It's just, right now, anything can happen, memes. I think hand buff is, like, there's some of the Divine Shield hand buff mechanics. They're laughed at, but I think there's, like, a potential is still there for it to be a good deck, but I don't think it's got the cards it needs to really push it to where, because it's not unfair enough.
Well,
that's really could, like the way to solve it. It's just not unfair enough right now.
Well, it's hard. The Jade matchup is just hard, period. Like, I mean, if you ignore the Jade matchup, I mean, the biggest issue is just tempo, right? I mean, I almost think that Paladin need more removal. Like, Equality has, I think, been
it's
so
outdone
strong.
Its usefulness.
That, no, I mean, it's so strong that I think the devs or the designers won't give them anything else. Where I think that Paladin actually needs even more removal, given how it's set up to be so defensive at this point. And just like things like buff, like you have to clear boards for that buffing stuff to even work.
They gave it Enter the Coliseum as removal.
Oh yeah baby.
Like they gave us a board clear.
Yeah, that's...
You seem amused by that.
That's not very good.
You seem very amused.
Yeah. Like
every night and just beat you, and you think it's like Avenging Wrath or something.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I almost think they need something else. They need something to help even more so with that. And the quality is just so. I think they've been, I don't know, affected by the fact that it's so strong that they've missed on that. They've given it plenty of heal. They've given it plenty of debuffs. It's just like I think it needs a little bit more if they're going to make that Grimy Goons thing work. It's still kind of far from working. Maybe one day with Murlocs it'll work. I don't know. Okay, next up we've got Priest. Now, speaking of another class that has a bunch of holes. And the first one we have is a turtle. Yeah, we got Tortolan Shellraiser. It's a 4-mana, 2/6 body. It's a taunt. So, we're getting a lot of taunts this expansion. Death Rattle, give a random minion +1/+1. Nothing too special here. Death Rattle, not surprising, given that the quest is Death Rattle. But what do you think? Noxious, what do you think? Have you start off?
So the 4-drop, I mean, it's good for the Death Rattle quest. Yay, awesome. it's a curve minion. It's a 4-drop for Priest. Yay, another one of those. 4-drops for Priest are notoriously over the top in terms of how many we have. And now we've got Shifting Shade and this. So now we have 4 4-drops in Priest. Now the question is, what do we play before that, right? Like, that's the problem-ish. I'm not sure I'd call it a problem, but that's one of the questions with the quest deck. What do you have on 2 to quest? What do you have on 3 to quest? What do you have on 4? Well, that's settled. You've got Shifting Shades and the Tortolan Shellraiser. So it's really down to the other minions, whether or not this is going to be good. It's either way a very solid card. 4-mana 2/6 with Taunt is a Bloodhoof Brave. It buffs something on the board that it's protected up until this point. So I think it's a fine card. But I'm not too sure yet. whether or not if Death Rattle Priest is going to be a thing, or if we're just going to try to play a control deck instead.
Okay, Sidonia?
Yeah, the Turtle is similar to maybe Twilight Guardian. So if the Death Rattle deck is good enough, it's gonna fit in it for sure. It just remains to be seen if the Death Rattle deck is going to be good enough. Like, they seem to be making a lot of Death Rattle cards for Priest, so there's going to be people trying that deck. It hasn't been good like in the past, but maybe with all the cards that are rotating, it's going to end up being good at some point.
I just realized I'm missing one of the cards here for Priest. Which is
right. There's another minion that came out for Priest.
I'll grab it.
Right. So,
but while we're talking about it, I mean, overall, I think the card's fine. And like Sidonia said, it's a replacement for Twilight Guardian because, you know, the Dragon Priest is going to be gone. We're going to be missing a lot of those very crucial tempo oriented cards like Whelp and Worm Rest and Twilight Guardian and Corruptor. Mm-hmm. So this at least is a substitute for that. But I don't know. My biggest thing is that it's fine. It's boring. You know what I mean? There's like nothing interesting about it. Here's the new one. And, you know, like when you're talking about some of the other classes and they're getting, even just like the last Paladin card we talked about, right? There's like so much dynamics to that. And every single one of the Priest cards, like outside of maybe Priest of the Feast recently, everything else is just like literally one dimensional. It's just like, okay, this is it. You know, there's no deciding. Just throw it down. You know, this one's kind of pretty much the same thing. You have something on the board, just throw this down, and it's just what it is. You know, the value, and whether you play it now or later, it doesn't really matter. It's just basically the same. You know, and for me, it's very indicative of the Priest class now, and that's too bad because I feel like, you know, it's definitely one of my favorite classes, and I just never get a chance to do anything cool with it, which kind of sucks.
But that's Hearthstone in a nutshell. Like, I'll just put it that way, right? Hearthstone is definitely a game about, you know, curving out. Because you don't have resource cards, so it's harder to not make you curve out, and it's harder to make you not want to curve out. But there are cards that they've tried to implement. In fact, like, one of the Priest cards we have this time around is fits kind of that in that realm with the Shadow Visions. Which is, like you mentioned, Combo Priest being awesome and fun to play. That is definitely a card that fits in there. If you're able to spare two mana to do nothing. It's two mana to discover a copy of a spell in your deck in Priest as an epic. Tries to mimic the whole, I get an extra Mind Blast type thing.
Has right? to be like a getting four Mind Blast. Like, what else would it be? Like,
well, I don't know, a Dragonfire Potion against a non-dragon meta after they're all rotated out. I'll grab an AoE, thanks. It's really not as bad as it seems if you're playing Dragonfires in a control deck. The question is, it's definitely good. Like, you can pick it up on turn two instead of skipping your turn.
Yeah, so we're talking about Shadow
Healing, healing the enemy face.
Yeah.
Then you jam it. I don't think it's bad. You can get Thought Steal in value decks. You can get a double up on a Reno-type deck with Raza and Death Rattles. It's really not that bad. The issue is, like, two mana to do nothing is notoriously awful in Hearthstone. We've learned that over time. So, you know, Combo Priest is awesome, but is it pushed enough? Again, going back to that question always, how unfair is it? If the answer is it's pretty fair, then it's not good.
And we're talking about Shadow Visions, a two mana Priest spell that's epic. Discover a copy of a spell in your deck. Sidonia, what do you think of this card?
The Shadow Visions, I think it will be played. Like, of course, you lose two mana, but a lot of the cards you might want to get with it are really situational. Priest has so many super situational cards that might be worth a lot more mana. Like, for example, Shadow Word Death costs three. Like, would you pay five mana late game to kill anything? Probably. Yeah. And there's also cards like Confuse, for instance. I want to bring this up because Taurus was playing it in his Dragon Priest deck at South by Southwest, and he was trying to convince us that it was good. And then I came under and said, oh, it's like Bloodlust for Priest. Is that it? So maybe you want Shadow Visions to pick up your Bloodlust for Priest if you are so inclined. It's probably still bad, but like, there's probably going to be a deck that wants to put like one of every situational spell and two Shadow Visions, and instead of playing like two Pain, two Death, and hope you draw them when you need them.
I mean, I think that Shadow Visions is one of those cards where, you know, it's definitely got some value now, but it is one of those cards that can have enormous value depending on what comes out, you know, for Priest. Whatever spells come out, right? They come out with even more powerful spells, or I've heard the quest is something you can get too, right? Because you can actually mulligan the quest.
Mulligan away and get an extra quest if you feel like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's
a real thing.
Yeah, that is a real thing. I'm not sure if getting a Mara twice is necessarily like a game ender type of thing for you.
Well, but, I mean, it'll definitely get you there.
I mean, it'll help. I mean, it's a full heal too, so it's great. Yeah. But from that standpoint, so yeah, I think Shadow Vision is a great card. It just doesn't necessarily make any clearer what the end game is for, you know, Priest outside of Nadoth at this point. But maybe we can get combo in it. Maybe we can get an extra Mind Blast too. You know, Balin Mind Blast, triple Mind Blast, or something like that, right? Or hope
Emperor's gone. Stop dreaming.
Oh yeah, it's not triple. It's still. That's the thing. Like, you can't even do much with it. You can't even combo that high with Priest.
I know how you feel. I know how you feel, man. I know the feeling.
Last card, I guess, for Priest was the Crystalline Oracle. This is 1 mana, 1/1 elemental, death rattle, copy a card from your opponent's deck and add it to your hand. It's basically a 1 mana, 1/1 Shifting Shade. Yeah, what do you guys think? I mean, Shifting Shade's not played right now at all, but maybe it will be with the quest and everything. Donia?
Yeah, it looks a lot like Squash Burglar.
Yeah, that too. It's the same.
And also with the quest that it enables, if the quest deck is good, it's probably going to be played. And also, it's probably even better than Squash Burglar because a card from your opponent's deck is probably generally better than a random card from their class because usually like half of them are pretty unplayable. So yeah, it seemed like a card that would be played.
So I think this card is actually so imagine Shifting Shade that reads that's like a 4 mana 4/3 mage card that reads add a random spell to your hand. Like you wouldn't play that. It's probably pretty bad. As a 4 mana 4/3 in mage that gives you a spell. But in Priest, like it seems just fine enough because you can survive. You don't need to get tempo out of it. I think the biggest deal is again the fact that it's a one drop. Babbling Book is played. Yeah. Web Spinner was played. Swash Burglar was played. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, another card came up that did the same thing. They tried to do Finders Keepers and, you know, I Know a Guy happened, but they're not minions, so they don't see play. Put them on minions and I'm sure they're played. Like, yeah. I'm betting you those cards are played. Making 1/1s and they're played. So it's an okay card in that aspect. The one thing that kind of sucks with this card is the fact that it's a one-cost card, which you want to play after your quest. So when do you really play it? Like, you want to play it after your quest, but you want to play it before your quest, so you don't know when you want to play it. It's just you're kind of on the fence about everything. Yeah,
you gotta get the coin, man.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You gotta go like quest coin this, exactly. And then you're happy.
Well, I mean, it has to.
It's really tricky.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, so is it when Death Rattle minions die, or when it's played?
No, it's when they're summoned.
They're summoned. Okay. Yeah, I just forgot. I've forgotten. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's obviously better than Shifting Shade just because it's on turn one, you know, or potentially on turn one, 1 mana. You know, you're not going to get tempo on turn one anyways as a Priest. So, I mean, especially with Whelp gone now, you're just never going to get it anyways. Might as well take some value and, you know, maybe even get, you know, a damage or something that helps you remove minion that your opponent put through. Yeah, overall, it's okay. Again, it's just like, it's not something we haven't seen before. With Priest. I'm just hoping there's something interesting that's coming up with it. Okay, let's see.
Well, I don't mind this type of deck. I just think it's not competitive enough on its own. You need more.
Okay, I think we're coming into the last set of cards here. We've already gone through a bunch of them, but this is the Warlock. The Warlock got 4 cards announced so far. And started off with their quest, which is a 1 mana Lakari sacrifice legendary quest. Discard 6 cards. Reward, Nether Portal. And the Nether Portal is a 5 mana legendary. It's a spell. Open a permanent portal that summons 3/2 imps. And when it says summons 3/2 imps, guys, it means it summons 2 3/2 imps, one on each side of the portal. And the portal is it's officially an object or a minion that occupies a spot on your board, but it can't be killed. You know, it's kind of like the seed in a way. It's just can't be targeted. Can it be silenced? Do you guys know? Like, how does silence work with all these cards that can't?
I don't think they're because they're not minions.
I don't think it does anything, so right? It's not considered a minion, so it's not silenceable either. So anyways, the point of the portal is for it to be permanent and have it continually summon 3/2 imps at the end of your turn. Okay. So this one I think generated a lot of discussion once it was shown and how it works. So Sidonia, what do you think?
I have actually like so many thoughts about these. One of them is that I really dislike the discard mechanic in Zoo, because so many games were decided when that deck was good on whether or not the Soulfire discarded the Silverware Golem or not. And if they do, they win. If they don't, so it's really frustrating on both sides to play a 50-50 on turn four that decides the game. Mm-hmm. And if the Zoo deck becomes good again, it's going to be more of that, and I will dislike playing with it and against it. So that's part of what I don't like. Like, if the cards are interesting as a mechanic, as design, I think they're very interesting. It's something we haven't had before. Like the portals, we've seen them in the Medivh quest in Karazhan. So I guess they were kind of testing the portals there. And so it's interesting. Like Zoo, usually, if they can grab the board early, they're never going to run out of value though. So maybe the discard cards will get played like even without the quest sometimes, because do you really need a portal that summons imps every turn? Because usually like Zoo's gonna lose if they don't have the board, and they're gonna win if they have the board, but they don't really need that to get it, in my opinion.
How hard do you think it is to discard six cards at a reasonable turn?
If you play Lakari Fellhound, it's not that difficult. You have that, you have Doomguard, you have Soulfire, you have the
Dark Librarian, and
what else?
Succubus.
Well, that's not going to play.
I'm sure there's going to be a couple.
Let's
more,
assume, too. Like, yeah. here's the math on this. Like, you start the game, like, the math on it says it's hard, because you start with, like, let's say four cards, draw one, and then you need to discard six total, so you need probably six more draws, right? So six cards that discard and six cards that are discarded. Now, out of these, some will be Malzahar's Imps, which will cycle sometimes. Some of them will be Darkshire Librarians and whatnot. So if you on curve keep discarding technically, and you just keep discarding the right target, i.e. the new legendary Clutch Mother Shenanigan, if you keep discarding the right targets, you'll be not only ahead on board, but also fine on card draw. Like, that's the most important thing. The issue is, like, how likely are you to discard the perfect target every time? And that's one of the things that I hate about Discard Zoo, is the randomness of it. As Sidon was saying, I don't know why they keep pushing so many. I mean, I get the discard theme. It's actually one of the themes that I wanted to see the most developed in Hearthstone. Discard is by far one of the most flavorful things Warlocks can do, I think. But I do not like how powerful some discards are, like Silverware Golem, for instance. Like, it's not like whenever you discard a card, it's guaranteed to be the one that's discarded. And then you draw it back or something. There's no guarantee of anything ever, period. It's always flip a coin. Sometimes it's a 20%, and then the game is over.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't like the discard mechanics that have such tempo affecting results, right? Like the Silverhand Golem is a good example of that. But I don't mind the Clutch Mother's Obvious, you know, like what it has right here, which is a two mana, two beast legendary. Whenever you discard, it gives you +2/+2 and returns it to your hand. Maybe +2/+2 is a lot, but at least it returns it to your hand, right? Because there's no graveyard interacting type of thing or digging through your discards and things like that in Hearthstone. So I felt like they had to add something that just recurses, right, in your hand, or at least when it's discarded, right? So you literally just hold it.
Right. So I'll just say something about Clutch Mother. 2 mana 2/2 that just whenever you discard it gets +2/+2 and goes back to your hand. What I do not like about the card is how much your results will vary when it's the card that's discarded and the other times where it's not. Because if this is the card you discard every time during a game, you lose zero card advantage and you're beefing up a 2/2. And that means that there was no drawback to your play. Now, in a mirror match, the guy who hits the most clutch mothers on this card is going to be the guy who has the most cards. Which is really ridiculous. Like, the coin flip on the zoo matchup is going to get so stupid that I don't even know if people will even bother with it. It's such a frustrating mechanic. I do not like those cards very much. If at least it were like a rare card or something where you could have two copies so you always have a clutch mother on average by turn X or Y, then people can play around it. You know, it's at least more consistent, but I don't like this.
What's interesting is Sidonia, like, do you think it even needed the buff? Like, I feel like the text is already great, you know, for
No, it's awful without.
Does it need the +2/+2, or should it be modified?
This card is so random, and of course, when you have only one card left, you can guarantee you're gonna discard that card every time. So it gets better, but that's only when you have like maybe 6 or 7 mana to work with that you can always like draw and then play your card and then maybe tap and play. Anyways, like you need flexibility to make sure. You're going to discard always the right card. So I think it's going to be worth playing, but I don't know how strong it's going to be. It's going to be really strong sometimes when you get really lucky. And if you discard it only once, then a 2-mana 4/4 is really good tempo whenever you need it. So that's going to be good as well. Like, I'm pretty sure it's going to be played, but the biggest thing about Zoo, like I was saying, like it's just, can it grab the board early? Like, yeah. It's always been good at winning when it has the board. So, and I don't see anything here that can help it get the board early. So it's still going to lose to Shaman. It's still going to lose to Pirat Warrior.
So we've been really focused on Zoo lock. Is there any other type of lock that could work? Like a new mid-range one. Demon lock or something?
I think
like
a mid-range deck that focuses on this card could work. But the question is, can you really do that? Because you need one drop Malkazar's Imp. And you need everything else. So maybe you play a deck that does not discard unless it's got exactly Clutch Mother in hand and it just keeps discarding her. Like, you know what I mean? It's just, how reliably can a deck play mid-range and play discard while keeping its options open as a mid-range deck? Because you have to eventually dump your cards, which you can't afford to because you're mid-range. So that's the problem. Like, you have to empty that hand at some point to get the favorable results. Seems complicated, man.
Yeah, but that's what's kind of cool about the discard. At least it's complicated, you know. There definitely will be coin flips and some rolls, and it kind of sucks. But at the same time, you know, you do have to manage and play around the discard, you know, as the player that has to deal with the discard. And, you know, there is some thinking at least involved with that, you know, that's on top of like your standard, you know, Hearthstone games that we've been seeing recently. So I think it is interesting. It just has some pitfalls, of course, but almost for sure we're going to see more discard cards, right? There's no way. There's still not enough. There's definitely not enough discards. So I have to see at least one or two more. Lakari Fellhound is like the last one we didn't talk about. 4 mana. It's a 3/8 taunt. It's a demon. Battlecry, discard 2 random cards. That'll be interesting. I've always played around with the thought of just Deathwing too, you know, just like maybe Deathwing is just your way of, you know, meeting that quest. And in the end, I mean, the nether portal, isn't that a good end? I mean, that is an end game, right? I mean, it's going to end the game like in a few turns after it's on the board. At least that's kind of how I think of it. So maybe you put one card Deathwing and that's the only card that you need to meet the quest, then, you know, you can build all kinds of stuff around it. Yeah,
maybe you can play for Deathwing. Maybe that's a thing.
I don't know. There's a lot of different ways of. But yeah, any last thoughts? I don't know, Sidonia. Any last thoughts on this whole discard lock and?
I definitely think it has potential, and like Warlock in the past has been only Zoolock, or some kind of combo lock or Reno lock, that kind of deck, hand lock. It's been always like pretty combo oriented or super aggressive. We haven't really seen good mid-range decks, so
The combo's gone now with PO being gone, right?
Yeah, combo's gone, so all the combo locks like Mali lock or something are probably gonna be gone as well. No more Dragon Synergy. Like, maybe Warlock can reinvent itself as a mid-range deck. Like, it still has that draw engine that's really good, but it's going to need, like healing for sure somewhere with Reno Gun.
Yeah.
If you want to have a mid-range deck.
Okay. All right, so we got through the cards. Oh my god, that was long. That was amazing, though. Holy, that was just, I don't know, how many cards was that officially? They probably like 20 cards or something. That was yeah, more than
a lot
we,
of cards. There were a lot of them in the past week.
Yeah, that was definitely a lot more than we were expecting, but it's good to get y'all's insights on it. Why don't we move on to giving a shout out to some of the folks that support the show and listen to the show. First off, for folks listening on iTunes, thanks for, actually, Mark NYC718 for leaving a 5-star review. For those of you that also listen to the show and love the show, you can leave a review for us, a 5-star one in particular, and it helps out the show, helps people find Value Town when searching for Hearthstone podcast. Same goes for Google Podcasts, and the show's also available on SoundCloud too, if you guys want to listen there. But I always want to just give a shout out to the folks that do leave us reviews and also the patrons. So Valuetown is 100% supported by Patreon right now. And you can go there if you go to patreon.com/Valuetown and you can support by making a pledge there. We've got some cool milestones and rewards. I want to give a quick shout out to some of our legendary producers, Mike T and Richard S. You guys are awesome as always. And then a few others, William C, Gary D, David T, Jacob P, Dan S, Dustin D, Lance B, Jason B, and Lewis A. You guys are what make this show happen. Literally, the show would not happen. We would not be able to do this without you guys. So really, really appreciate you guys. And again, if you guys want to help us continue doing the show and want to meet some of our crazy milestones like Laughstone, think about doing that again by going to patreon.com/Valuetown. Well, we were still barely above this milestone. So that's... that's what that means. It's that time, and Sidonia is probably wondering, what the heck are you talking about? Sidonia, we actually have this section of the show where we what we call Smilestone, and we have to smile for 20 seconds. And that's it. You can talk or whatever, but just you have to smile.
He's going to count down from three, and then yeah. You just stare the camera as cringily as you can, and you just give your best smile right, for 20 seconds.
3, 2, 1, go.
That's a new feature, right?
Okay, that's 20 seconds. All right. Woo.
That was nailed
good.
It.
That's good. Nailed it. Nailed it.
We nailed it. Nailed the milestone.
Well, so Daniel, he's got a nice smile, so it's probably easy for him to share that smile. But anyway, thanks again for obviously the patrons make that the milestone happen. So thank you so much for doing that. And you guys are awesome. All right, let's go really quickly, I guess, through the events, because we spent a lot of time on the cards. But so Trinity series wrapped up. Complexity took it 6-4 over Luminosity. Great production. You know, like it was, I don't know, how many months? 3 months, I think?
3 months about, yeah. About three months of the ongoing gameplay.
Yeah, and it was the center of, I think, discussion each time it was on. Yeah, they showed us team chat. I mean, I think they made that a standard at least now. Yeah, overall, Sidonia, what do you think? Just anything bad to say about Trinity, or just good things to say? Anything?
Yeah, only thing bad I have to say is that I wasn't in it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah,
the only thing that's sad.
Yeah, yeah, I've watched as much of it as I could. It was really interesting to watch. I loved hearing the players talk to each other during the plays. I actually know most of the players in there, so it was fun to see them interact. And yeah, it was really great to see an event supporting teams, and one of the best events. I just feel like as a player, also like team events are really fun. So yeah.
Okay,
from around that for sure.
Yeah, overall, I'd say the same thing. I do think that whole talk show thing at the very end was a little bit weird. You know how they had that
weird, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know if I would do that again. but everything else, you know, like the whole funny memeing things. The casters obviously were great. And the team chat was excellent. You know, it was so funny. At one point I saw they had the whole Twitch bot thing going on, right? Or the chat bot thing going on.
The chat bot, yeah.
And at one point they're like, type blah 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 to sap the casters, and like instantly they got sapped, right? So it went to the team chat, and then at one point they go type this to unsap the chat, and like nobody typed
nobody
anything.
Did it, right?
So I'm like, oh my god, this is going to be the easiest casting day ever because they'll never be unsapped. So anyways, they finally just like interjected and came in, and you know, just like, oh my god, you guys didn't even vote for us, or
they cheated. Yeah.
The few people that voted for us, thank you, right? I thought that was pretty hilarious. But yeah, anyways, kudos to ESL. Hopefully we'll see the next Trinity series, and I don't know, maybe later this year, something like that. And congratulations, Complexity. Those guys were played amazing, of course. Let's see, next up we've got Bahamas. So you know, all the players are over there. I saw some tweets from at least the casters. They're pretty much already over there enjoying the sun right now. But overall, yeah, what do you think? Who's your pick for the winner? Because, you know, we get to pick and get those packs and all that good stuff, right? Who did you guys select? Or did you select anybody?
I didn't. I never do. I'm that guy.
I got zero last time. I picked Tyus last time. I got zero, man. I should have picked Sidonia, man. I don't know why. Yeah. How about you?
I didn't pick himself.
I didn't pick myself. Yeah, for Bahamas, like I've tested a bit with Docpone actually. Okay, like for my prelim, like every time like one of us qualifies for the event, like it was me, then Monsanto, then Docpone. So I hope he wins. He's really underrated right now. Like he made some stupid mistakes because he was nervous on camera, but yeah, hopefully he can get over that and play as well as he can, because I've talked to him a lot and he's a really strong player. And I actually feel like all of the players from NA are really good. If you look at Terry, for instance, he's been to BlizzCon before. He's a
many times
player. Like every time he's been in events, he's always been really good. Like he was never like on a team that would give him a lot of exposure or opportunities, but he's always made the best of it. And like Frozen is really good. We all know that. So I met Dr. Pikininki as well, and he did well in the and PAX East also. I think he's a really strong player too. So.
Oh, how well did he do at PAX East? How far did he get? He got top 16, I think, or?
Maybe top 12 or something like that.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's good.
He was pretty far into it.
Yeah, I picked Frozen. I just think that, I don't know if you know Frozen's lineup was necessarily better than everybody's, but I don't know. It's more of a gut.
He's an insane player. Like he'll play like 16 hours a day, not even complain.
I feel like it's. I mean, he's had a couple. You know, he's definitely had a win at one of the ODNOC tournaments. You know, semi recently, but I don't know. I just feel like it might be his time. You know, to finally notch a big title. You know, a big win here. So that's what I picked. At least get one win, Frozen, please, man. I still gotten zero packs from this whole vote thing. So as long as you can win one, I'll be happy. That'd be great. Good luck to all those players, and I'm sure they're going to have a great time in the Bahamas regardless. It's definitely a lot of fun.
Yep.
There.
It's hard not to enjoy yourself, right? Hard. It's going to be hard.
Totally. Okay, well, let's move on. We've got Mechatorx Workshop. We've got a few cards to talk about here. Maybe go a little bit quicker than we normally do just because running
here. Sure.
But we got five folks that, or at least four folks that sent in some cards, and again we have a backlog right now, guys. Whoops. That's the wrong thing. We got a backlog right now, so you know, if you haven't seen your cards quite yet, then there's still a chance that you might see it. But let's talk about Wayne H has a couple cards here that are warrior cards. Ooh. and the first one, they're both legendaries. First one is a quest, so he's kind of adopting this new expansion and what they're doing with it. And it's a quest, take one fatigue damage, reward Magni Bronzebeard. And the Magni Bronzebeard is a 5-mana 4/10 body, also a legendary. At the end of your turn, gain 12 armor and add a random legendary minion to your deck. Yeah, so, man.
Oh, this is so beautiful.
It's pretty crazy, but I thought it was like super interesting though, right? I like the quest of taking one fatigue damage. I think that's kind of cool.
I'd say maybe take six. So you have to go to be like three cards deep. Okay. I want you to be three cards deep to get in, because now he can't take any more fatigue with Magni. Yeah. He takes literally zero fatigue for the rest of time.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about the deck. I was thinking his hand.
I think the question is like, here's a question. If you play this in a deck where you cycle only yourself nonstop, right? Like you just go crazy and you just cycle your own deck to get the fatigue faster. And your opponent's not even fatigued at that point. You're the only guy who's in fatigue. Then this card is pretty bad. But if you're able to play Control Warrior deck and you're both in fatigue at the same time, then this will completely Shrek them. Like there's, this is devastating.
Thing is, though, really it still like doesn't beat Druid in the end.
Well, 12 armor turn, I mean, you might start because you're taking zero fatigue and you're jamming legendaries.
Possible, yeah. You can might be able to get, well, I mean, Druids can go infinite, so it doesn't.
Yeah, you won't beat the Jade Idol spam, but you'll beat maybe like with some tempo legendary that wins. Deathwing comes out, they have nothing, jam.
What do you think, Sidani?
Well, I think like the quest makes it that you have one less card. And given that, it could be way more powerful than it is right now. It's not because you're in fatigue that your opponent necessarily has no way to deal with it. So essentially, you get 12 armor, a minion, and one legendary that you're going to draw. Like, you're probably not going to get any more than that. So I feel it could be even stronger, even off situational.
Yeah,
it's probably going to die no matter what, right? Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. So you're basically.
It should at least have taunt. It should have taunt and maybe, like, I don't know. It should have something else, but...
If it has taunt, you can't play it behind a taunt and try to protect it and get more legendaries, though. So maybe it's even better without...
I don't know. In fatigue, does it matter that much? Like, how often are you protecting stuff at that point?
I've played a lot of Control Warrior, and you just, like, sometimes you fatigue, you still have 10 cards. Like,
in your hand,
That's true. I almost think it would have been...
Control mirrors.
Oh, I mean, it's definitely very fun and cool to play. I wonder if it would have been even... cool if it just gained armor, like that's it, you know, like you didn't necessarily draw legendary.
Well, I'm willing to bet that the quest we're going to get from Warriors is going to be play X minions with taunt, and the reward is going to be a dude like this that gives you like 10 armor a turn, something absurd.
Okay.
It's probably gonna be way better than this though.
It will be way better
like
too.
Quest cards,
but I love the concept of tying a quest to fatigue. That's the important part. I love the
concept
idea
is great, but like I feel like we've only seen like two quests so far, I think, and the rewards are always really strong. And the rewards for quests have to be insane, because not only you have one less card, you have to play it on turn one. It's like one less card, one less mana. You lose some tempo.
One less turn.
You lose so much from playing the quest that the payoff has to be huge to make it worth it.
Absolutely. Okay, next up we've got Oliver G with Sacrificial Toad, which is a warlock, and it's a 2/2 beast, which I thought a warlock beast by itself was unique, but then we saw a beast released today in Angoros.
Menagerie, my friend.
Which
Menagerie.
One? Which one?
The cluster much my Letty grandfather thing in warlock.
Oh, okay.
The clutch mother. I don't know what her name is. She's a beast, but you can play that in Menagerie warlock. Right?
Okay. Yeah. Exactly. But I was just saying that we didn't have a beast until then, right? Oh, maybe maybe some of the hounds. No, the hounds were not considered beasts.
No, the fell hounds weren't even fell hounds technically. But
so, anyways, this is Sacrificial Toad. It's epic. It's a 2-mana 2/2 body beast. Inspire your life tap deals damage to this instead of your hero. Death Rattle. If killed by life tap, draw a card. Okay. So it's basically life tap draws you two cards. Yeah.
Right. Once.
Yeah, exactly. So what'd you think of this?
I'd like to see this be a card that instead of like if killed by life tap just reads whenever you life tap, like you draw an extra card, so you could maybe buff it with Demon Fire, so you get like repeated double value, if that makes sense. As opposed to a one-time thing. I mean, you're clearly smashing a Demon Fire on it. That's a bad idea because you're just replacing a card with something else. But the general concept of it having to die, it's super flavorful because it's named Sacrificial Toad. But I think it could have kept the same name and had a bit more recurrent value. I think maybe a 1-mana 2/1 with the same ability would be just fine.
Yeah, I agree with that. Danny?
Yeah, it's a value card that can't really get much value because the 2/2 will kill itself. So you pay 2 mana to cycle a card, basically.
Right. It's a loot hoarder, basically. But the problem is you have to also have two open men at the life tap. Otherwise, you never get value out of it. So it's a bad loot hoarder that never really gets anything done unless you're sparing four mana. So I think a 1 mana 2/1 with this ability would be fine, or 0 mana 1/1. I don't care, but not quite like this.
Or just change the Inspire. You could change the Inspire to actually give it health or something. Like every time you live tap, you give it health. So it, you know, maybe it can fight board. It's always going to give you. Well, actually, the Death Rattle is life tap, though.
The idea here is that the Death Rattle is counterproductive. Yeah, what you want to do is you want to tie the Death Rattle to continued value as opposed to a one-time thing. Sure. That's really just it.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. The next card is Elise. And this is a new Elise, so a third Elise. It's a 5-mana 3/3 body. Elise the Survivor. Legendary Battlecry Discover a card in the wild set. So this is a 3/3. All right. Well, first thing I noticed about this card was that, damn, she ugly, right? Like this is not
she's
like
the any survivor. Other. Yeah,
she's like not like any of the other Elises.
She died. She died.
Yeah. I mean, this would never. I mean, Blizzard would never let this happen. But I don't know. I think it'd be pretty fun.
So it's a 5-mana 3/3, right? With an ability that lets you discover a card in the wild set. Now, Tomb Spider was not played. Pretty much nothing was ever played that discovered for that high a cost. It's just not really something you want to do for that price. So I think any competitive deck would never play this. Now, where I would get triggered is if this came out of another effect. Let's say Elise, the actual Elise now, the Trailblazer, gives you a pack. The pack contains this one, and then you discover a wild card. You find Rag, you win. Like, in a tournament setting, that would trigger me to no end. But I could see this being fun for a lot of people who just play the card for fun. You know, I see that. Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this is a card, like, I think, is Chenman still here?
Oh, he's going to come back. It's fine.
All right. So, yeah.
Yeah, you can keep talking. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a card, like, other than the image that is kind of troubling. Like, if you just compare
it, the image is troubling, isn't it?
If you compare it to, like, Ethereal Conjurer, like, you have a benchmark that you can make a 6/3 that discovered a card you actually want, which is a spell in Mage, and it's not even going to be that good. It got niche play, so it would need to be, like, at least a 5/5 to be playable.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, or maybe 5/4 or something like that. So 3/3 is much too small to be good. And also a card in the wild set, like the card is super random, so it's probably going to be bad at that point. Unlike a spell in Mage, you actually want a spell. So,
I think that's fine, right? We don't want this card to be good competitively. You do not want this to be good competitively, so I'm okay with it. But the big thing is, if it's meant to be a fun card, then I think they should make sure that this Elise cannot come out of something like, you know, a random effect that lets you discover a neutral minion, and then she comes out, and then suddenly that guy randomly got an Elise in like a BlizzCon tournament. Otherwise, I think the concept is amazing.
Yeah,
I mean,
the concept is fantastic.
Okay, last two here, and these are both related to just the general concept of anti-Jade cards. You know, that's been something that people have been talking about, right? Whether it's maybe something that affects the Jade counter or something specific to Golems. So we have a Priest card, and he chose in his email, he said he specifically chose control-oriented classes to present this concept. So one of them is a Priest card, one of them is a Warrior card. The Priest card is a 4-mana Jade Eater Dragon Epic 4/5 body, and it's a dragon. Battlecry, destroy all Jade Golems and add 4 health to your hero for each one that destroyed.
You don't even restore, you literally add.
Okay. And then the Warrior one is 5-mana Jade Slayer, random 5/5 beast, Battlecry, enemy Jade counter is reduced by -5/-5. So I guess like set back by 5. So if it's at 6/6, it'd go back to 1/1, or just start over. Okay, so why don't we talk about these cards individually, and then maybe talk about like what you guys think about, you know, something affecting the Jade mechanic itself. What do you think of the Priest Jade Eater Dragon?
So Jade Eater Dragon, I would rename Jade Devour. I know, because these are custom cards, so I'm gonna have to comment on like whatever the hell comes through my mind. I think the idea of killing all the golems on the board and adding 4 health to your hero is good. The issue I see is I don't feel like Dragon Priest had a problem with Jade. I mean, Control Priest did. I don't think Dragon Priest ever struggled. They were just farming Jade Druid by jamming bigger and bigger stuff on the board. I don't think that's the correct archetype to give it to. Maybe pick up something that's more Control Priest based.
Well, it could be the new Dragon.
I mean, it's a fine card.
I mean, there's no Dragon Priest anymore, right?
Right. So. There's no Dragon Priest anymore after rotation. So maybe this creates like a new type of, like the beginning of a new Dragon Priest. I just don't know if Jade Eater Dragon is really solving the problem because Priest can't win on the back of that tempo play.
Okay.
Like a control deck killing Jade just doesn't do anything with that. It's like, oh, well, you're resetting your counter. If I don't have any damage, you still win at some point. Got it.
So, Donnie?
About the card, I think if you really want to counter the Jade mechanic, I would go about it a different way. The same way I didn't think like the anti Pyrat Crab was good. There's no sideboards in Hearthstone, so putting a card in your deck that can only counter one specific mechanic is going to be pretty counterproductive. Like, of course, it's a 4/5/4/4, but like I don't think those cards are super interesting to me. But you could go, like I saw someone suggest it, like the surgical extraction way to have a card that can remove specific cards from your opponent's deck, so that could work against any deck basically.
Yeah,
but against Jade decks, you would remove Jade cards. Against Rat Warrior, you would remove weapons, etc. So that could be a more interesting way to try to combat some of these linear decks that can go out of control like Jade. So about these specific cards, I don't think these would see play, honestly, because of being a Priest card. Like, I don't think Priest would play that because it would be bad in every other matchup. So
same goes for Jade Slayer then too, right? Just, you know, having it.
Yeah, it would be bad in every matchup. So
yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they would afford playing something like that.
Yeah, I think in the end you're just better off like as a whole on ladder or whatever, just playing against the, you know, all the decks that you play against versus just the one Jade.
Yeah, just basically play a well-rounded deck as opposed to a highly specialized and decked one, because otherwise you'll run into a bunch of situational hands that you can't do anything with. And to go back to the point, and that's going to be the final point I make about Jade's. If you want to counter them, the idea of, you know, making, let's say they print a legendary neutral that reads, oh, delete all the copies, you know, the one cost spell copies of an opponent's deck. You haven't touched their hand, you haven't touched that. So if it's in their deck and they have a Jade Addle in there, you can, you know, actually remove it from the game.
Yeah.
They will never know better because they will never draw them, right? This is kind of the point.
That's true.
You're not taking any discard. You know, you don't take any discard. You're not making their hand, you know, disappear. You're just removing cards from their deck. The same way that if Dirty Rat is allowed to be a thing to counter certain combos, I don't see why maybe that couldn't be a thing as well.
Okay. All right. Well, that wraps up Mechatorps and everybody. Corey L was the person who sent this last one, and Parajock was the one that sent the Elise one. So thanks guys for sending that in. And if you, any other folks listening want to send in their custom cards, go ahead and do that for Mechatorps Workshop. You can email those also to valuetown@chamanv.tv and we'll try to get to them. Why don't we skip over a Q&A for today? Cause we've gone over for so much. We'll save these questions for next week. Kind of wrap things up now. Sidonia, it was amazing having you on and getting your opinions, getting a pro opinion on a lot of these new cards. Any shout outs you want to do, or where can people find you?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. You can find me on Twitter, SidoniaHS. On Twitch, it's TSM_Sidonia. Also, I'll be streaming a lot more. So if you're interested in that, check me out or give me a follow. And I just want to give a shout out to TSM. I'm super happy to be signing up with them, and super happy to go to events representing them, because that's always the most fun thing.
So you got DreamHack Austin at the end of April, and then what's after that? Is there any other big ones already established yet? Or
yeah, there's a DreamHack in Denver, Atlanta, Valencia, and Montreal.
There's a bunch of DreamHacks already planned for the NA. It's good. It's good this year.
Awesome! Wow,
it's a very good year to be in the NA for Hearthstone. Yeah, oddly enough,
definitely. Man, 2017, man. That's a big difference. But you know, like 2016, that was like the first DreamHack, right? On US soil. Yep. So now we're having how many on US soil? That's crazy. Noxious. Any shout outs or where can people?
Shout out to Complexity. They took home the Trinity. Yes. Well done to them. Pretty happy. It's kind of interesting because we had Super JJ just kind of play Gwent nonstop, and then you just hops on Hearthstone, you know, casually, just goes back to the Hearthstone and wins the event with his team. On the flip side, you know, the metagame has been kind of stable, so it's good for them to see. Either way, if you want to see me stream, these days I don't stream much Hearthstone as I am waiting for the expansion to get hopefully some of the hype back on board. It's the Noxious_GG and on YouTube, NoxiousGLHF, where I do card reviews every single time new cards come up, which actually means that after I'm done here, I might have to tackle some of that. That or I'll
talk about the cards again.
Do it tomorrow. I'll just talk about the cards again.
Yeah.
That's just what I do.
Yeah. I just realized we didn't even mention the players that were actually on the Complexity team. So, you know, congrats to Super JJ,
Yagut.
Mr. Yagut and Crane, you know, for making up the Trinity. And in second place, right, LG was Chalky, Zale, and Frozen. Did they have another person? Did Muzzy ever play? I forget if it was just those three the entire season.
Yeah, only three people, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But Muzzy is in LG.
Yeah. So it's just those three. Congratulations to those guys. For me, I just round things out. Thanks to the two of you guys for doing the show. You know, we're obviously having to do this show a little bit earlier this week, but you guys watching it, you're watching it at the regular time, of course. But you can find all the show, just the VODs and everything on youtube.com/ChainManV. And of course, this show will be available on iTunes a little bit later, maybe a little bit earlier. So sometime on Wednesday, you'll definitely see it up there too. You can follow the show's Twitter account at twitter.com/ValueTownGG. That's going to be it, guys. So for Sidonia, Noxious, and myself, Chanman V, we'll see you next time, guys.
Peace out.
Later.
Bye-bye.